on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 1 on LBC, it's Richard Spur, but now it's time for Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dean. A packed programme tonight. We will talk about the plan from one of our supermarket giants to track and monitor their staff in a crackdown on slow workers. The Tories are morphing into a Trump MAGA tribute act. We'll hear what they are proposing from the Tory party conference. We'll get an update on our autumn weather with a nice surprise on the way. We'll hear the latest on the Gaza peace deal and talk about the Green Party leader's call for the legalization of all drugs. We'll check in with our US correspondent for the latest from there. But first, our freedom of speech is under attack. Our freedom of association and protest is being curtailed. That's the charge levelled against the Prime Minister. Do you think our freedoms are being protected, or are they under assault from this Labour government?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock... Kemi Badenoch has insisted the Conservatives can win the next general election during a speech at the beginning of the party's conference in Manchester. She's told an audience it's up for the fight, while also acknowledging there was a mountain to climb against Labour and Reform UK. But LBC's political editor Natasha Clark says Kemi Badenoch also adopted a more humble note at times.
She also said, "We failed to stop the boats after years of responsible government. Our failures on the economy and immigration were what cost us." And actually, you've got stronger borders and stronger economy. Those are the two slogans that the Conservative Party have at their conference here in Manchester, and that's what we'll be hearing a lot more from her.
Indirect negotiations between Israel and Hamas on a peace deal for Gaza are expected to begin in Egypt tomorrow. Hundreds of people have been gathering in Manchester and London to mark the second anniversary of the Hamas attacks on the 7th of October. In the US, President Trump has been talking up the prospect of peace to reporters.
There'll always be some changes, but the Hamas plan, I tell you, it's amazing. You're going to have peace, if you think about it, peace in the Middle East for the first time in, they say, really, 3,000 years. So I'm very honored to be a big part of that.
As you've been hearing just now with Nick Abbott, the Home Secretary has announced plans to give police new powers for dealing with repeated demonstrations. Shabana Mahmood says they can leave some people feeling unsafe, but the Green Party leader Zach Polanski has been telling LBC the government's plans are deeply irresponsible.
I think it speaks of a government that is losing control, a government that is terrified of being criticised, and a government that actually, or a leadership, that knows it's on its way out. So I'd call on the government and the Home Secretary to do the right thing, both in terms of stop selling arms to Israel and allow people to protest.
Nearly 500 people were arrested on Saturday during a rally in support of the banned organisation Palestine Action in central London. The German Chancellor is linking Russia to a spate of drone sightings over his country's airspace this weekend. Friedrich Merz says he's assuming the Kremlin was involved in most cases and it was probably conducting reconnaissance flights. And in sport, Rangers have sacked their manager Russell Martin after their 1-1 draw at newly promoted Falkirk in the Scottish Premier. Fans of the Glasgow club staged a protest after the match earlier today. LBC weather, rain in the north but drier elsewhere with some clear spells. Staying breezy as well and feeling milder. We'll see a low of around 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood stated the country is facing a period of heightened tensions and division, so has granted police extra powers to, what she said was, tackle the repeated disruptive protests we have seen. This follows the new Green leader Zach Polanski's speech vowing to defend Britain from a descent into authoritarianism under Keir Starmer, warning that the Prime Minister should believe that our rights and our liberties were non-negotiable. Is there any truth to this? Let's speak to Russell Fraser. Russell is a criminal defence barrister with Garden Court Chambers, specialising in public order and protest. Good evening, Russell.
Good evening, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate your time. Well, the Home Secretary says the right to protest is a fundamental right in our country, and also says that she's giving police the power to ban protests if they deem them to have happened too often. Can you logically hold both opinions?
It's difficult to see how one can. Unfortunately, it's a refrain that we hear repeatedly from Home Secretaries when new powers are proposed and announced, that fundamental freedoms won't be affected and so on and so forth, but they continue to erode. And I'm afraid it looks like this is a new Home Secretary seeking to make a bit of a name for herself by going after, yet again, peaceful protest.
Is it an unusual thing for a Home Secretary to say that you can protest, but only a specific number of times to be decided at some future date?
Yes, it's not. What seems to be of concern to her is the repeated and ongoing nature of some protests. I'm not entirely sure which it is, looking at the Home Office's statement, but it presumably is events around Palestine. What has tended to happen with protests in the past, like Extinction Rebellion and so on, which have gone on for a number of days but then have come to an end, there have been, and the police have ample powers, let me assure everyone listening, to deal with those sorts of protests by placing conditions on them, such as where they can take place, how long they can take place for, how many people can participate, and where they must not go if they are also to be taking part. So there's no shortage of powers available to police.
Yeah, I mean, everything you just described doesn't really sound like freedom.
Well, you know, speaking as I do, someone who deals with a lot of, comes into contact with a lot of protesters and sees a lot of protesters who are perhaps being arrested a lot and so on, one doesn't want to give the impression that the rights to protest are completely under threat, because it would be wrong to create that sort of fear. But it's certainly a continuing erosion. People are still able to protest, but it's becoming more and more a position whereby the government say, well, you can protest, but we'd like you to do it this way. Thank you very much.
Which, by definition, is not protest. If you're protesting in the way that the government would like, well, that's not really protest, is it?
No, precisely. And look, the law recognises this, and there are some famous speeches and past decisions by judges about protest being messy, and those who are out of sympathy with them are bound to be annoyed by them and fed up with them and all sorts. But that's the price we pay for living in a democracy, where there may be a lot of people seeing a number of protests that have taken place in recent times, many of whom will be in sympathy with them, many of whom who won't be. But that's happily the society that we live in.
Yeah, you mentioned the protests about what's happening in Gaza. The arrests, numbering in their thousands, are for mostly peacefully holding pieces of paper with the words Palestine Action on them, not
yes.
attacking the police, not setting fire to hotels. And they're done because the government has deemed Palestine Action to be a terrorist group, but refuses to tell us why they've come to that conclusion. Do you think that's odd?
Well, that's something that will be, as I understand it, I'm not involved in that particular litigation, but I have colleagues who are, and as I understand it, that's something that's will be ventilated in court in the hearings which are ahead. I think it's in mid-November. It's not a surprise necessarily that the government say we know about things that we can't possibly share with you, but trust us, there's a very concerning background to all this that needs to be taken into account, and judges can look at that evidence in what are called closed proceedings. But it's often leaves civil liberties campaigners and lawyers like myself a little uncomfortable, because of course we don't know what it is that we're referring to.
Have you any experience of so many people being arrested on protests that have been characterised by their peaceful nature?
Well, if one looks back to, yes, frankly, at the height of the sorts of direct action, peaceful protests we saw from the likes of Extinction Rebellion some 5 or 6 years ago, several people were arrested at that time. I suppose it was slightly different in that it was more of a... it brought London to a standstill at times and so on and so forth. But with these protests, of course, what people are doing is sitting quietly, as you said, holding signs with a message on them, and have made it quite clear that that's what they'll be doing, and are emphasising the peaceful nature of what they're doing, and yet find themselves being arrested. So as far as that sort of character is concerned, it's somewhat exceptional.
And just on the people who have been arrested, how might a conviction affect their lives?
Well, I mean, of course, any conviction has an effect on a person's future prospects. If they're young, if they're about to step into the workplace, if they're seeking to enter certain types of education, obviously a lot of the protesters appear to be retired people for whom it may have less effect. But, you know, any conviction which may result from protests of this sort and which carries the stigma of terrorism is bound to be treated with a great deal of concern and caution by any number of different types of bodies or work or potential employers that a person may come into contact with in the future.
Do you think the government has painted itself into a corner, is surprised at the public's refusal to be cowed, and is now trying to arrest its way out of the mess it's caused?
I think there's ample evidence that that is the case, because it seems to me that, for example, yesterday, the police obviously took an operational decision to have sufficient numbers of officers present in Trafalgar Square in order to arrest people. Obviously, the Commissioner and the Home Secretary made statements in advance of that protest, apparently hoping to dissuade people from taking part, which itself may also give rise to concerns about civil liberties. But at the same time, if the police were concerned about whether their resources were being diverted to Trafalgar Square at a time where they might have been needed elsewhere, then they could have taken that operational decision not to send officers to Trafalgar Square, particularly, as I say, where a peaceful protest is taking place where there was no risk whatsoever of any disorder.
Yeah, governments in the past have always objected to protests concerning their actions or policies. But if the same standards of repression, if we can call it that, were applied before as they are now being proposed, would we have gay equality, women's ability to vote, religious freedom, racial equality, workers' rights, and everything won by not accepting what the people were given by their supposed betters?
Well, it's a strange dichotomy, isn't it, that we always find ourselves in, where at the time the people undertaking such actions are often condemned by various groups and governments and authority find it difficult to know how to deal with them. But then sometimes years later, they're viewed in a very different way. And I mean, who knows? It's certainly the case that there is a proud and long history of civil disobedience in this country. And many people would say that has affected positive political change in the country. Others may be less, we may be somewhat sceptical of that, but, you know, it's certainly an argument that can be had.
And were any of those rights won by just one march? Because that is what is in the background of this proposal to limit the number of protests that particular groups will be allowed to make. If any group is to take an extreme example, is only allowed to make one protest, well, it's not really going to change anything, is it?
Well, I think Shami Chakrabarti said something much to that effect today. You know, that change has never been won or come about through effectively protesting according to how the authorities would like groups to do so. And it does seem very knee-jerk, because, of course, I guarantee that at some point these protests will come to an end. They're somewhat exceptional in the way that they've taken place over the duration of the situation in Gaza. And there will come a time, who knows, that your news item just now suggested that a peace deal may be not far off being achieved. And if that's the case, it may be that these protests will come to an end and we won't see anything like it for some time. So that is another reason to question whether really this is something that is necessary. But as I say, the focus ought to be on the existing powers that the police have, and they have ample of them.
Do you think the Home Secretary was justified in saying that repeated protests leave sections of the community scared to leave their homes as a reason to restrict these protests? I mean, does a blind man, a vicar, and an 89-year-old woman holding a piece of paper make the residents of Westminster fearful of leaving their homes? Or is she implying that the existence of a protest anywhere can intimidate someone somewhere else? Or is she just tying herself in knots, trying to come up with some way to justify this sort of Trump-style crackdown?
Possibly the latter. I mean, I'm probably looking at, say, the same page of the Home Office website as you. And again, it will no doubt be uncomfortable to some that she purports to speak on behalf of the Jewish community, as it is put in the quotes on the Home Office website. Now, most communities contain a diverse range of opinion about a number of different issues, and I'm sure the Jewish community is no different. So to that extent, again, as I said earlier, there will be people within any community who are entirely supportive of a particular protest. There'll be others who aren't. Maybe there are ways of managing it short of cracking down on protest itself. Could I just add as well, you mentioned Westminster, and I think it's important to emphasise also that one of the things that the law recognises is that not only is the right to protest important, but the right to protest within a reasonable distance of a particular thing that you might be protesting about, or in this instance, it's traditional, isn't it, to protest in places like Trafalgar Square, Whitehall, and Parliament Square, very close to, you know, the seats of power in this country. And that's obvious, and that's something that has to be borne in mind whenever the police are carrying out any restrictions.
We're in an odd position now because we're being attacked by the Trump administration. They published a report claiming that human rights and restrictions on free speech in the UK had worsened, which is kind of laughable under the circumstances. But more seriously, the United Nations say that they are concerned that counter-terrorism laws are being used on conduct that is not terrorist-related and risks hindering our fundamental freedoms. Are we becoming the kind of autocratic regime that we supposedly deplore?
Well, again, I don't want to alarm people unnecessarily. I mean, I think it may be a stretch to say that. But, of course, when protests and particular types of protesters and issues are the protests which are routinely being targeted, because this isn't unique, this particular response from Shabana Mahmood today. The Labour and the Tory governments in the last few years have introduced new legislation in order to deal with particular types of protests, and it is a crackdown because they want to have less of it and be able to curtail it more effectively. But happily, I don't think we're quite on the road to autocracy yet. But it's not something that one is ever complacent about, because these things, you know, the commissioner is asking for more powers. I've yet to see a commissioner of the Metropolitan Police ever decline a power when it's been offered to him by a Home Secretary. So I would be slightly concerned to see, you know, it gives pause for thought.
Good to talk to you, Russell. Thanks for that. Russell Fraser, criminal defence barrister with Garden Court Chambers, specialising in public order and protest. Well, what do you think? I mean, we might not be on the road to an autocracy, but there are signs to turn off for autocracy ahead. Are we going to take those roads? Do you think our freedoms are being upheld or attacked under this Labour government? 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850. Email nicka@lbc.co.uk. And if you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone, 0345 6060 973. 60 60 973.
This is LBC.
When they're away at uni and the show you all love is on telly. When you're miles apart but still laughing at the same joke. When the emojis come thick and fast.
Ah, triple smiley face and a heart.
I knew they'd love that.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. Make sure your child has a TV license when they go to uni, so they're covered to watch all TV channels and you can still enjoy all those TV moments in the family group chat.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, always.
Yeah, quite.
I read e-books. Oh. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Oh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We are talking about the, what some people have called a crackdown on our freedoms to protest and our freedom of speech. Police have been granted extra powers by the government to impose conditions on repeat protests. The plans will see police forces granted wider powers by the Home Secretary over how protests are policed and organised, and, by extension, I suppose, whether they're permitted or not. Because what does that mean? Impose conditions on repeat protests. If they just get tired of you protesting about this or that, they can just say, well, you've had your opportunity to do that. Now you must be quiet under fear of arrest. It seems like an extraordinary place to be in this country. 0345 6060 973. Leeds. Hello, Mick.
Hi, Nick. I'd just like to say the Home Secretary and Keir Starmer have just overstepped the mark now. Because these are peaceful protests against genocide. This is our freedom to protest and our freedom of speech. The only reason they want to stop these protests and these marches is because of their failure to acknowledge a genocide in Gaza, which the UN have confirmed by law. And their failure has caused this attack on the synagogue, because it was on the news this evening.
I don't think you can say that. But
Nick, an eyewitness on the news this evening said that this person at the door said, this is because you are killing our children.
Right, okay, well, it wasn't because of. But the government would say that they're only arresting people who are showing, demonstrating visibly support for Palestine action, or verbally, I suppose. And I guess from their point of view, you can protest about what's happening in Gaza without actually allying yourself with Palestine action, which, for reasons undisclosed, have been deemed a terrorist organization. So I suppose that people are free to protest, but the number of people that have been arrested does seem extraordinary, and some of the people, are obviously not terrorist. Well, obviously is perhaps too strong. Don't appear to be terrorist sympathisers. I mean, there was that famous case of the chap in Edinburgh, I think it was, who was arrested for wearing a T-shirt that said Plasticine Action, which was supposedly a protest about the increasing use of AI in animation in film, which was an entertaining interlude, but in a much more serious situation. So I guess that would be the position of the government. You can register your support for the Palestinians without actually registering your support for this particular group. Now, I wonder if the people that are doing that are being a bit obtuse. They're being... it's almost as though they're deliberately trying to be arrested. And I wonder if the government was actually prepared for this. I would imagine that they expected people to just slink away and not show their face after the first round of arrests, but they haven't done that. And on that subject, the UN body that stated Israel were committing genocide in September are the Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. So I don't think there's, I don't think it's in law, but that's the body that said that. Thanks for that, Mick. 0345-6060-973. Sandy says, will they all be charged and with what? What will be the likely punishment? Well, the likely punishment, it can be severe. Even if you don't go to jail, it can restrict your life in the future. You might not be able to travel to certain countries. Your record will be besmirched with the taint of being a terrorist sympathizer, which can't increase your employment prospects too much. So it is serious business, but I just wonder if the government has... They made a decision in haste, expecting the people to abide by that decision, and the people felt strongly enough not to do so and put their freedom at risk, I suppose, is exactly what's happened. Hazelmere. Hello, Benjamin.
Good evening. Hi.
Benjamin.
Right. I was honestly back from Tesco shopping on route to home, but I had to pull over and give you guys a call on so many issues. So, Palestine action being prescribed. I told your producer. They attacked arms manufacturers that guarantee the nation's safety. They attacked an RAF airbase. Enough. Terrorism. Terrorists. Done.
No, that's not terrorism. That's just...
Why not?
Well, it's vandalism.
What is terrorism, then?
Well, terrorism is terrorizing a group of people for fear of their life. What they did was more vandalism.
No, but if you vandalize the arms manufacturer, then tomorrow the army doesn't have ammo. Or if you planes, what's next? You're going to blow up an RAF base. I mean, what's enough now for the liberals?
What's next? So we're going to convict people on what they may do in the future?
No, as in what they've done, I think in 99% of the rest of the world is enough for them to be in jail for life. It's just, I don't know how, through what lens
throwing
you guys
paint
see
on
it today.
Throwing paint on a plane is enough to get you jailed for life.
No, infiltrating an RAF base, that should be life in prison.
Really? Why?
Period. Why not?
Why not? Why not? Not really an argument. Not really. It seems a bit extreme, Benjamin. But thanks for that. Thanks for pulling over. May says, how can the country afford forever weekly protests with inconvenience to the rest of the population to the cost of millions draining away our police resources? Well, every freedom that we enjoy was gained through protest, one way or another. Because authorities will not give up what people want if they ask politely for it. It has to be taken. And it really is not relevant how much the police is spending on policing these protests. I mean, I drove past the remnants of the protest just this weekend, and the number of police well outnumbered the protesters that were there. So it seems like an operational decision to flood the area with police. They didn't have to do that. I mean, the history of these protests is not violent. You know, we've got people sitting quietly holding up pieces of paper who are then arrested. I mean, it seemed like... Now, I'm no expert, but to my eyes, just driving by, it seemed like a disproportional response. And inconveniencing the rest of the population is a bit over the top, May. I mean, there's hardly anybody who lives in Westminster, and the inconvenience was slight. And I'd suggest that most of the inconvenience was caused by the police themselves, who were closing off roads. 0345... 6060973. Paul says, I don't like having to say this, but it seems that J.D. Vance was right about the erosion of freedom of speech in the UK. Well, that is... with everything that the Trump regime is doing in America, it was galling to hear it from Vance's mouth when he was here. The Trump administration published a report claiming that human rights and the restrictions on free speech in the UK had worsened. I mean, how bad must things have got for Trump's people to be saying that we have gone too far? But I think you can take that as seriously as anything else that he or indeed Trump has said. But the United Nations, in almost uniquely, agree with the Trump administration. They say that they are concerned that counterterrorism laws are being used on conduct that, in their opinion, is not terrorist-related and risks hindering our fundamental freedoms. It's an extraordinary thing to have from the Labour Party. It's not really what you would have expected when they came to power. I mean, other parties, perhaps, you might have expected it from, but Labour? 0345 6060 973. More of your thoughts on this to come. After the news, though, Egypt will apparently host peace talks between Israel and Hamas tomorrow. Are we a step closer to peace in the Middle East? That's to come after this 10:30 update on the news with Tim Daly.
The Conservatives are due to claim a future Tory government would save £47 billion of taxpayers' money by cutting spending on welfare, aid and social housing. The announcement's being expected from the Shadow Chancellor Mel Stride at the party's annual conference in Manchester tomorrow. The Home Secretary has announced plans to give police new powers for dealing with repeated demonstrations. Shabana Mahmood says they can leave some people feeling unsafe. And the German Chancellor is linking Russia to a spate of drone sightings over his country's airspace this weekend. Friedrich Merz says he's assuming the Kremlin was involved in most cases. LBC weather, rain for the north, but drier elsewhere with some clear spells. Staying breezy with a low of around 10 degrees.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Why this staggering level of incompetence?
Straight to the point.
This is the economics of the madhouse from this government.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
But she does seem to struggle with those sums.
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll! The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
I'm fulfilling more international orders thanks to working capital support.
Export insurance protects my business against the risk of not getting paid by an overseas buyer.
At UK Export Finance, we help businesses export with confidence. Between 2024 and 2025, we provided over £14 billion of government-backed finance and insurance to help businesses grow overseas. Search UK Export Finance to find out how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders, and get paid.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
More of your thoughts on what some people are calling an erosion of our freedoms, freedom of speech and freedom to protest in this country, to come, 0345 6060 973. But let's talk briefly about what is happening with the potential peace plan. On Monday, the Israeli leader won a peace plan from President Trump that promised him total victory in the form of a take-it-or-leave-it message to Hamas. The militant group would have to release all the Israeli hostages remaining in Gaza within 72 hours, lay down its arms, and surrender any role in the territory's future, or Israel would be given a free hand to pursue the group's destruction. On Friday, responding to a new ultimatum from Donald Trump, Hamas announced that it was ready to release all the hostages, but it said nothing about when, and demurred on laying down its arms, and said it wanted to discuss the details of Trump's plan, which was taken by some on the Israeli side as a yes, which actually meant no. But further discussions are underway, and let's talk about that with Oliver McTernan, director and co-founder of Forward Thinking, a UK-based organisation that works to resolve conflict through an inclusive dialogue with all sides. Good evening, Oliver.
Good evening, Ed.
Well, you must be heartened by what has happened so far. What are your thoughts about Hamas's response, and what do you think the Israelis may do next?
Well, from the beginning, from Monday, I think we were put seeing a blame game being played out in public. Trump and Netanyahu gave what I would call a unilateral ultimatum. Now, Hamas responded, put the ball back on their court, saying, yes, of course we'll give the hostages, but we need a bit of time to get them all together. And it didn't concede on some of the other points, apart from giving up the government in Gaza. Now we see again Netanyahu comes back with the ball to them, saying, right, we want the hostages, but you also have to disarm. So I'm not heartened by the whole process, to be honest.
Well, disarming was part of the plan, wasn't it? That was part of the Trump proposal. And Hamas said a qualified yes, but they wanted to discuss some of the details, amongst which was a reluctance to lay down its arms and objecting to Tony Blair particularly being part of this transitional government, and Donald Trump himself, who wants to install himself as chair.
Yeah.
Do you think that this, but Trump's response to all that was to say, yes, they agree, and it's an unqualified yes from Hamas. Now, do you think that that was in order to sort of put Benjamin Netanyahu into a corner from which it would be difficult to actually refuse to go along with the process as it continues?
It would be a very unwise person, Nick, to predict the intentions of Donald Trump, you know, because they vary from day to day, as we've witnessed in a number of cases. What worried me about the plan they presented, the 20-point plan on Monday, was it took me back to 2003, to Iraq. And I thought these are exactly the mistakes that were made then in Iraq. And we know the consequences of that. We're still living it with it, with the ISIL group still existing and all of that. But it was the idea that you had a sort of colonial power taking over, running a country. You had the debartification, you know, those who knew what was going on being removed from office and so forth. The list goes on. So I don't think this is the way that you will end a conflict that's been going on for over 80 years. And I think hopefully the meetings in Sharm el-Sheikh tomorrow will begin a serious sort of negotiations. And we saw in Ireland, unless those are inclusive, unless there's a realistic time scale, you will not get resistance movements moving into a political process, and that's what's needed.
Well, the world's response to this deal is overwhelmingly positive. Do you think that Netanyahu and Hamas, I suppose, are hemmed in now by the expectation from the world that this is it, this is peace, that they have to accept some of the things they might not have were it not for the glare of publicity and for Trump's expectation that both sides accept the deal?
Well, you know, I think what Hamas can accept is basically, and should accept, because it's reprehensible that the hostages have been kept this long. What they can do is release the hostages and also talk about their role and disarmament. But I think they're perfectly right in saying that decisions on how Gaza should be governed and all of the other aspects need to be inclusive, taken in consultation with the other Palestinian factions, with the West Bank and themselves, with the other parties. And I think that's a proper response. You see, the whole thing is a presentation outside existing international law, outside the rule-based order that numerous people gave their lives to establish after the horrors of the Second World War. All of those things are being ignored. So I don't see it as, you know, the road to peace. I think it's good to stop the nightmare that's going on in Gaza and the nightmare for the hostages and their families. But I think to get real peace, we need to have a solution that fits inside international law.
Yes, it also seems probable that it would take more than just a few days to iron out some of the problems that either side has with this deal. And yet Netanyahu went on television to say that any negotiations over terms must only last a few days. Is that reasonable?
That's being unrealistic. You see, from the beginning, the last 2 years, Netanyahu has been the one consistent person. He said, my purpose, my goal is to see the total demise of Hamas. And he hasn't deviated from that, and he hasn't now deviated. What's worried me is Trump said on Saturday that the bombing must stop immediately, and yet for the last 2 days, the bombing and shelling has gone on in Gaza, and I think yesterday alone, 71 people are reported being killed by bombs. So it seems that he is risking the wrath of Trump by, you know, sort of not following what his public orders, you might say, were.
Yeah. Do you think that Netanyahu and Hamas are both really sort of signing their political demise if they agree to this deal? Because the right wing of the Israeli government's coalition are balking at abandoning their dream of forcing Palestinians to leave Gaza and annexing the Strip. So this agreement might topple the coalition and threaten Netanyahu's position.
Well, I gather that other parties have said to him, if you go along with a peace plan, if you start something that can lead to peace, we're with you. So he may lose Ben-Gvir and Smotrich from his coalition, but I think he will gain other leaders who will come in and form a new coalition and keep him in power. But to be very honest, I think his intention is to finish the game. And, you know, I think that is just going to continue the cycle of violence that we've seen for many years.
Well, do you think we're being played, essentially, that both Hamas and Israel are just saying what Trump wants to hear with no intention of actually going through with any of it in the expectation that Donald Trump will just get bored and become disinterested?
Yeah, I think there's part of that. But Hamas, I think, want to see an end to the current conflict because they're under great pressure from the people of Gaza. Remember, there are over 2 million people in Gaza suffering a daily nightmare. And many of the people whom I know have said to me, we've come to our end. We can't bear it anymore. And remember, a number of the people are relatives of the Hamas fighters and political figures. So they would be under pressure there. They're also under pressure from the Muslim and Arab states. And I think they've been playing a constructive role in the last few days, you know, in encouraging them to take a very political response to the Trump plan.
Very good to talk to you, Oliver. Thanks for that. Oliver McTernan, director and co-founder of Forward Thinking, a UK-based organisation that works to resolve conflict through an inclusive dialogue with all sides. Now, back to your thoughts about the what some people are calling a restriction of our freedom to protest and a restriction of our freedom of speech under this current Labour government. Guildford, Marianne.
Oh, hi, Nick. Yeah, I feel very strongly about this because this was brought on by a civil liberties group, nothing to do with pro-Palestine as such, but simply recognizing that the way that Palestine Action was prescribed was really to suit certain agendas of the Labour Party, who I would say were quite embarrassed in a sense that they had not done a lot more to speak out about the situation in Palestine, and therefore embarrassed, decided they would make a big statement by prescribing Palestine action. And the way they did it, by making it inevitable that it would be passed in Parliament, was very sneaky and very worrying, that they put three organisations together, including two that are really nasty organisations, Russian-based, and that therefore the MPs would have to vote for either all or neither, which I think was extremely devious.
Yes, well, the UN would agree with much of what you said. Their statement of July this year says the UK government's decision to proscribe the Palestine Action Protest Group under terrorism legislation raises serious concerns that counter-terrorism laws are being applied to conduct that is not terrorist in nature and risks hindering the legitimate exercise of fundamental freedoms across the UK. It's not really what you would assume would happen in this country.
No, and I think it just shows that under certain circumstances, so-called democratic countries will resort to subterfuge and very, very worrying acts, basically.
Thank you, Marion. 0345-6060-973, LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Terror at the synagogue.
Everybody else! Yes. The pulse! Go away!
He's got a bubble!
The attack in Manchester on Yom Kippur brings the rising tide of anti-Semitism into sharp focus. I spoke exclusively with Israeli President Isaac Herzog.
This heat wave of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish feelings all over the world at the end reaches bloodshed.
But is the government doing enough to tackle anti-Jewish hate?
Anybody who breaks the laws of our land, they must face the full force of the law.
Anything but a united kingdom. So where does the country go from here?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast, back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the LBC app.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
I've been asked by Shredded Wheat to read out their ingredients list. Drum roll. Whole grain wheat. No, that's it. A single ingredient, high fibre cereal. Shredded Wheat. It simply does it. I'm telling you, that's it. Applies to Shredded Wheat Bite Size and Big Biscuit only.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
We are talking about what some people are calling an attack on our freedom of speech, our freedom of expression, and our freedom of protest. This is because of, I guess it started really when the government proscribed Palestine action under the Terrorism Act of 2000. And what the UN said about that was UK domestic counter-terrorism legislation defines terrorist acts broadly to include serious damage to property. But according to international standards, terrorist acts should be confined to criminal acts intended to cause death or serious injury, or to the taking of hostages for the purpose of intimidating a population or to compel a government to take certain actions or not. It misses the gravity and impact of terrorism to expand it beyond these clear boundaries to encompass further conduct that is already criminal under the law. What are your thoughts on that? 0345 6060 973. Luton, hello, John.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's ridiculous. I mean, I've been waiting for some sort of sensible discussion on this. I cannot believe the amount of money we spent. Shocking. It's over 50 million quid just on the on police going to arrest disabled people and blind people. I cannot believe this is Britain. And my friends who are work in Russia say, "You say, what's going on in your country? This is crazy." I mean, it's completely... And the other thing I would just say, if people had a placard saying, "I support action in Palestine," they would not be arrested. It's all about the wording. So this is a crazy thing. So you could just have those change of words and they would not be able to arrest anyone.
Well, I guess it's a change of words, but it's also a change of belief and support. It's a change, the visible change of belief or support, isn't it? I mean, you could say, "I object to to what is happening in Gaza," without actually using the words, "I support Palestine action." And I guess that the people who are being arrested for doing that, they knew full well that their arrest was likely from recent experience. And they're making a political point, I suppose, which might cost them dearly.
Well, it might do. It just seems to be a crazy waste of finance, taxpayers' money. I mean, sending the police over to guard an elderly 70-year-old is something out of Monty Python sketch. I think we're getting into Monty Python territory, really. You could write a whole sketch. I'm waiting for the sketches to come out. The other thing I want to know, why is Yvette Cooper's, who's been fired? Don't forget. So why is she been moved to another department? Why are they holding back the real details of why this group is more dangerous than, as you say, graffiti or physical damage to an aeroplane? So we're waiting for this bombshell information, and they're still waiting and not giving it to us.
Well, yeah, they're saying, trust us. And I think that gets to the root of the problem, is that people don't. Thanks, John. 0345 6060 973. Stroud. Jill.
Good evening. Good evening.
Hello, Jill.
Hi. It's interesting that we're talking about protests, and we do have to discuss this. But the protesters who are risking their liberty want us to talk about why they're protesting. And, you know, it's a case that we've got Israeli companies who are lobbying. They have the door, they have access to number 10. We have arms companies who have access to number 10. And now we've got really good people, law-abiding all their lives, prepared to sit on the road with a sign, risking arrest, because that is the only way we can be heard in this broken system. So it really does expose the corruption of government. You could sit on the road with a sign that says, "I support genocide in Israel," and you wouldn't be arrested. You sit on a road that says, "I'm against genocide, I support Palestine action," and you're arrested, because we haven't got the money to chuck at the problem. We're just the ordinary people who expect our government to do a decent thing.
But that's the key, isn't it? If you just held up a sign saying, "I support the Palestinians," without saying, "I support Palestine action," then that is not an arrestable offence.
I realise that your discussion is about protest and about the government cracking down on protest, but what their attempts to crack down on protests do is actually highlight the corruption and the vested interests for whom they're working. Are they working for good, decent people who want, these people want genocide to stop, and they want our country to stop being complicit in it. And maybe the government sometimes should think, what is it that the people who voted us in are protesting against? What are we doing wrong? And maybe we shouldn't sell arms and support a country that's committing genocide. So I know it's important to discuss the protest, and it's terrible that the government is clamping down, but we also need to discuss why they're clamping down, who they're clamping down on, and the messages that they're trying to suppress. That's the issue, I think.
Thank you, Jill. There's many other factors, but this can't be not having an effect on the government's popularity, which has significantly fallen of late. Bridgend, Beau.
Nick. Right, the right to protest is a fundamental right of our democracy, isn't it? Obviously. To I don't know what the government's plan is, I haven't quite, but to limit it to once a month is just to make it impotent, isn't it? We know protests are time critical and they've got to touch a nerve. So the government to fob it down the road is to say, it's a terrible thing to do. Oh, are the government going to say, Nick, okay, you can protest, but we'll make it clash 8 till 9 with Strictly or 7 till 8 with this pro... It can't happen. The right to protest is to protest when we prefer as free citizens. Not for the government to tell us.
Yes, if the government was in charge of the rota of protests against its own actions, then there wouldn't be any.
No, it'd be 6 o'clock in the morning, you know.
Only when it's raining,
exactly. Or, I don't know, when the Red Roses are winning the World Cup and when nobody's going to be on the streets. It's just a fundamental... it's a trick. It's a government trick to say, we'll decide when you can protest because the only point of protest is to get a point across and we won't let you get it. We'll let you speak once a month or once a year or...
It does seem extraordinary that they're saying on the one hand that the right to protest is a fundamental freedom of this country, and on the other hand they're saying, we've removed your fundamental freedom to protest unless we pre-approve it. And you don't try to do it too many times. Now, I think one of the reasons that the Green Party has shot up in the polls is because their new leader is good on TV, but he's also addressed this directly. Zach Polanski said he's vowed to defend Britain from a descent into authoritarianism under Keir Starmer. Now, just that sentence seems bizarre that you would say that, anybody would say that about a Labour leader. But when you start adding things up, as Zach Polanski has, then it doesn't seem so strange anymore. He says, this country has a proud tradition of protecting civil liberties, but once again, the Labour government is cracking down on our rights, from terrorist proscription against protesters, to banning journalists from their conference, to diving into a rushed, evidence-free plan for digital IDs that are likely to discriminate against minorities. He said, the alarm bells of authoritarianism are now ringing. And each one taken in isolation might not ring those bells, but you put them all together and people are understandably concerned. Thanks for that, Beau. Tooting. Hello, Jan.
Hi, good evening, Nick. Nick, I had a couple of points, but I think I'll keep to one. One of the main points is that not just what happens to all these people that have been arrested, but the thing is that there were so many... pro-Palestinian groups involved in this thing than the weekend, like an earlier caller said, and that what's really disturbing is what Starmer said. I got a quote here. He said, peaceful protest is the cornerstone of democracy, and there's just like concern about something in Gaza, but a minority have used these protests as a pretext for stoking anti-Semitism. So it's like anti-Semitism, and because of the Manchester killings in the synagogue, it's like being conflated with this hysteria amongst, the rising anti-Semitism in the country. Mm. And on all the university campuses everywhere, they're really getting it's a hysteria. But it's a pity that it's all got conflated with the genuine Palestinian groups, that have come together for this weekend's thing. But what are they doing with all those people they've arrested? It's crazy. You know what I mean? Are they nuns? They're priests? They're not terrorists. They're pro-Palestinian groups. We got one in Tooting. We've got one with Palestinian Friends of Palestine.
Yeah,
there's a lot of
I don't know what they're doing with them, and the courts are already chock-a-block. I don't know how long it will take for them to have their cases heard. It seems like the government has walked themselves into a corner that they weren't expecting to occupy, and now to my eyes, it doesn't seem like they really know how to do anything other than try to arrest their way out of it. what a position to have to find themselves in. Thanks for that, Jan. Plenty of, sorry I couldn't get to all your calls, plenty of opportunities to talk about this on LBC in the near future. But we're going to change the subject after the news. Down in the polls and searching to regain significance, Kemi Badenoch has taken the Conservative Party conference as an opportunity to announce a Trump-style ICE mass deportations policy targeting up to 750,000 people. Off the back of leaving the ECHR, joining the likes of Russia and Belarus and North Korea, would deportations on this scale flip British values on their head or protect them? How would mass deportations of your friends, neighbours, maybe even yourself, make you feel about the future of this country? 0345 6060973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. The Conservatives are due to claim a future Tory government would save £47 billion of taxpayers' money by cutting spending on welfare, aid and social housing. The announcement's expected to come from the Shadow Chancellor Mel Stride at the party's annual conference in Manchester tomorrow. During her opening speech earlier today, the Tory leader Kemi Badenoch said the Conservatives would reassert themselves when it came to economic responsibility.
People won't listen to us again until we show them we have learned from our mistakes and changed. We've got to do this, and we have to do it properly. What have we learned? That you can't have a budget that has £150 billion of spending giveaways and billions more in tax cuts without saying where the money is coming from.
President Trump says the proposed Gaza peace deal is great for Israel and he's honoured to play a part in it. Indirect negotiations between Israel and Hamas are due to resume in Egypt tomorrow. The Board of Deputies of British Jews has accused protesters supporting the banned group Palestine Action of almost gloating over the Manchester synagogue attack. It's also calling on the hundreds of people arrested in central London on Saturday to be investigated for stirring up racial hatred. The Home Secretary is giving police in England and Wales new powers to restrict demonstrations. The criminal defence barrister Russell Fraser has been telling Nick Abbott on LBC the public should be concerned.
Unfortunately, it's a refrain that we hear repeatedly from Home Secretaries when new powers are proposed and announced that fundamental freedoms won't be affected and so on and so forth, but they continue to erode. And I'm afraid it looks like this is a new Home Secretary seeking to make a bit of a name for herself by going after, yet again, peaceful protest.
Six people have been arrested in connection with the death of a man in the East Midlands during the early hours of this morning. Police were called to a house in Leicester by paramedics just before 2 a.m. And the Prime Minister of Georgia is accusing the country's opposition of trying to topple his government. He's been speaking after the ruling Georgian Dream Party claimed a landslide victory in disputed local elections. Protests and political unrest have become widespread after it halted talks on joining the European Union. LBC weather, rain in the north but drier elsewhere with clear spells developing. Staying breezy but it will feel milder. We'll see a low of around 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
The fall of the Conservatives is one of the most precipitous in modern history, from a stonking majority to being thought of less favourably than Labour, the Liberal Democrats, the Greens and Reform, according to the latest YouGov poll. And now they are in the desperate position of having to try to out-Farage Farage. At their conference, Kemi Badenoch has announced that a Conservative government under her leadership would pull the UK out of the European Convention on Human Rights. Let's talk about this with Philip Trott. Philip is Senior Counsel at Vanessa Gangwin Immigration Law and joins us on the line now. Hello, Philip.
Good evening.
Well, last year I note that Kemi Badenoch said that leaving the European Court of Human Rights would not solve the UK's problems. Now, months later, she says that it will solve the UK's problems. Who's right? Last year's Kemi Badenoch or this year's Kemi Badenoch?
I think last year's Kemi Badenoch is more to the point. I think... I think you've got to look at this in context. She's made a number of fairly radical proposals at a time when she's running a party conference, at a time when she's down in the polls, and at a time when she's looking for headlines. And the proposals, as far as I can see, are to try and give her the headlines which she so desperately seeks. And the situation we're in is that migrants who come to this country historically could be returned via the so-called Dublin Agreement, because we were part of the EU. We're no longer part of the EU. And who took us out of it? Can you remember? I think it was the Conservative Party.
Yes.
So, but I think, so we've got to look at the context before we look at her headlines.
Yeah, before the Tories took us out of the EU, before they got Brexit done, in 2015, there were 131 people who came here, supposedly illegally, from France. Now there's 30,000 plus per year. So leaving the EU meant that the Tories removed our ability to send people back. Is that what made the UK a much more attractive destination than it had been when we were in the EU and we could send people back?
Well, I think it's always been a fairly attractive destination because the freedom to work here is significant. And also there's a pull factor of the English language and lots of other families of other migrants already here, and the European Convention is an attractive vehicle for asserting certain rights. But I think the biggest problem is the fact that we can't with ease send migrants back to where they came from. And it was also another issue is that there's no legal route for asylum seekers to come here in the first place.
So how would leaving the ECHR affect our ability to do that?
Well, the key argument would be if you took away the right to family life and you took away the right to private life, which are the two key arguments raised by migrants seeking to challenge a refusal of permission to remain, migrants would no longer have good arguments to stay, because if you can't allege that you're seeking to remain to exercise your right to family life or private life, you can no longer stay with such ease as they can do at the moment.
So that would be if we left the European Court of Human Rights, then we would take away people's ability to claim asylum on that basis, or for them to refuse the government's ability to remove them. But that doesn't that doesn't address the 1951 Refugee Convention, though, does it?
Because no, it doesn't.
By
it doesn't
that, a refugee is a person who has a well-founded fear of persecution for reasons of race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group or political opinion. And yeah, surely that would apply to most of the people who would come and try to apply for asylum here.
That would certainly be the argument they would raise. The issue always is a question of fact, because it's easy in one level to raise it in an appeal. It's sometimes more difficult to actually assert it successfully. So the right would still be there if the convention was still there, and those wishing to assert it would be saying, I have a family here, or I have a fear of persecution on convention grounds, and those rights would still have to be investigated.
So if we leave the ECHR, and by all likelihood it would not solve this problem as it's described, then presumably the same people who are encouraging us to leave the ECHR now would say, ah, well, all we have to do is to also leave the Refugee Convention. And that would put us in the company of how many other countries?
Some pretty horrible other countries. I think Russia.
I think Belarus would be the other one.
Belarus would be the other one that immediately comes to mind. And a few other, Korea probably, North Korea. Some pretty horrible other countries. So I think it's all about context here.
In what sense?
Well, because if you're saying that we are going to take away the rights to refugee protection, you've got to look at your group of friends who also either not allowed those rights to be supported, and see who they are.
What do you make of, because this Tory policy is supposedly based on a report by Lord Wolfson, the Tory shadow Attorney General, who says that the ECHR treaty places a significant effect on border control. We've dealt with that. To be clear, he's not a constitutional lawyer, though, is he? He's a commercial lawyer. I mean, with the greatest respect to Lord Wolfson, this really isn't his field, is it?
No, it's not his field, not his field at all.
No, do you think that Badenoch just asked someone close by with the expectation that she'd get the answer she was looking for?
It's a bit like phoning a friend, isn't it?
Well, is that an unreasonable assumption for me to make?
Not, I don't think it's unreasonable at all. I think it's about asking experts what the consequences would be, rather than contacting people in your party who are going to give you the answer that you want.
Another answer he said was leaving the ECHR was compatible with the Good Friday Agreement that brought peace to Northern Ireland. Is that true?
I can't think how it could be true. I'm sorry, you've caught me on the hop here, but I cannot think in any sense it would be compatible with the Good Friday Agreement, the equivalent of the Good Friday Agreement. I cannot think how.
It's curious that he would say that, because I don't think I've ever heard anybody who actually was in a position of authority who actually said that out loud. It seems somewhat extraordinary.
Bizarre.
What do you make of the proposal from Kemi Badenoch that, along with her other proposals, that asylum seekers should not be allowed a lawyer when their case is being heard?
Well, I think there's always a right to fair representation. And I think access to a lawyer probably gives you that allows you to exercise that right. I've read her other ones. I haven't read that one. But how on earth can you frame a complex argument about complex immigration and international instruments? It just doesn't stack up.
Well, her assertion would be that they wouldn't need a lawyer, as they would simply tell the truth.
What? Oh dear, I'm exasperated. My mother was a refugee. She came here in 1938, and she was in the fortunate position of being articulate and well educated. But if somebody's coming to this country and saying, "I've got a refugee convention right to argue," and the facts are incredibly complicated, and 75% plus of asylum appeals are successful for the courts, all of whom are by and large supported with some legal support, I'm beginning to laugh at her proposal.
Well, another one that you might find equally amusing is that if their initial appeal is refused, they would not be allowed to appeal on that decision.
Yes, I read that this evening. Well, if the original appeal is refused, what justice is there of allowing the decision maker to make the decision and have no one challenge it? I mean, say the decision is perverse, as I have seen on many occasions. How on earth can you challenge it if there's no appeal right?
And as far as I'm aware, the decision would also be taken out of the hands of judges and put solely in the hands of representatives of the Home Office.
Yes.
Any
yes.
thoughts?
Well, as I said, if you have a perverse decision, of which there are many, how on earth can you challenge it?
You mentioned that number 75% of appeals were successful. A lot of people say that one of the reasons for that is that that asylum seekers are coached by their legal representatives to use buzzwords and phrases which will, help their appeal along. Is there any truth in that?
Well, I've been doing immigration law for in excess of 40 years, and Maybe I'm an odd lawyer, but I would never dream of coaching a client on what to say in the course of an appeal. In fact, it would be a breach of my professional codes, and if it was discovered that I'd coached somebody, I would be struck off.
But is there any evidence to suggest that people are saying, you know, certain things that would make their case more viable that might not necessarily be true and that are difficult for the authorities to check on?
Well, first of all, there's always a good lawyer and a bad lawyer. There are lawyers out there who will try and win at any costs. And I suppose there are lawyers who are going to say, well, why don't you say this? Because the Home Office can't challenge it or haven't got the resources to research whether what you're saying is true. There's always going to be people out there like that. But the whole point about a legal system is it's fair and balanced. And the Home Office have got infinite resources.
What about the removal from the auspices of the ECHR? Do you think that holds potential dangers for British citizens who are not asylum seekers?
Could you expand on that point a little?
If we're to no longer respect the ECHR, I mean, which of the articles within would people be happy to give up, like freedom of thought, freedom to a fair trial, freedom of liberty, no punishment without law, you know, right to life, these sort of things? Would they disappear and then have to be replaced with similar ones written by British lawyers, or would there be a period where we don't actually have these protections at all?
Well, if you take away certain protections, just basic fairness would require you to replace them with something else. But that takes legislation takes time to be enacted, and you can't just say we'll take it away and then, you know, we're going to whistle in the wind for a while whilst the legislative process takes its turn.
Because people have been complaining about a sort of an increasing authoritarianism in this country and others. I mean, is it quite likely that once rights are, you know, basic fundamental rights are taken away, that a government would be perhaps loath to reinstate them?
Well, we have seen that elsewhere, haven't we?
Very good to talk to you, Philip. Thanks so much for your time. Philip Trott, Senior Counsel at Vanessa Gangwin Immigration Law. So what do you make of this, then? These Tory plans announced today would see the removals force, that's what they're calling their version of Donald Trump's ICE goon squad, they'd be given £1.6 billion and sweeping new powers, that's the phrase they used, sweeping new powers, including the use of facial recognition without warning to spot illegal immigrants. The force would integrate with the police as there's the... I don't know whether they're actually integrating with the police in America. They certainly look like the police, apart from that they're masked and driving in unmarked vehicles. But they're certainly armed like the police. What do you make of the prospect of that for this country? Or is Kemi Badenoch just desperately throwing stuff at the wall, hoping something will stick? Trying to out-Farage Farage. 0345-6060-973 LBC.
This is LBC.
Ah, the familiar sounds of autumn. Time for woolly jumpers, spiced lattes and the crunch of leaves underfoot. But at Southeastern, we know those same leaves can make train journeys tricky. When compressed under train wheels, they can create a slippery surface just like black ice. That's why we're clearing the way with special leaf-busting trains, so you can travel safely, whatever the weather. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/autumn.
Southeastern.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. And with a 1-in-4 chance to win instantly on pack, you could get your hands on a £2,000 Jet 2 holiday, a Big Mac, Merlin annual passes for four, and even more epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items, subject to availability. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
0345 6060973. So Kemi Badenoch at the Tory Party conference has announced that she is modelling what she calls the removals force on the ICE. I don't know what you call them. They look like goons to me, so I'll call them the masked ICE goons who drag people away to unmarked cars in America, use chemical weapons on US citizens, use stun grenades and dum-dum rounds, and actually shoot protesters. Do you think it's a bit tin-eared for Badenoch to say that she's modelling her proposals for a removal force on Donald Trump's ICE force? Or does she assume that that's actually what the people that she's trying to appeal to want? 0345 6060 973. Tavistock. Hello, Rose.
Hello, Nick. I gave this a lot of thought last night, and you've described ICE perfectly. I don't think I need to say more. Dragging husbands away from screaming wives, etc. By far the most important thing about this is not what she said or any politician does. It's how we and our media react. That, to me, is what shows the direction of the country. We are supine. She won't do this, but Farage, if he gets in, will. Well, as we remain numb to the notion of massive immorality, of acceptable criminality by the state which is entrusted with all our welfare, then the erosion of laws and human rights will extend throughout the system to all of us, because such methods as this are only ever entertained by people bent on absolute power throughout the system. And each time we pussyfoot around evil, keep quiet about wrongdoing, then even worse ideas come through the likes of reform enabled by Badenoch. And before long, they'll be enacted. One party adopts mass deportations. The other says, I'm going to do ICE soon. Well, when will a party now say, we're going to fire woke teachers, dot, 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 dot. Farage is following Trump's measures, enlisting the US to interfere in our lawmaking. Others getting Musk from America to incite violent government overthrow in Britain. Farage replying to Starmer by referring to Antifa and the late Mr. Kirk, both, Nick, irrelevant to our country, and still no pushback against the blurring of ourselves into a foreign, blatantly authoritarian power. The outrage now isn't Badenoch, it's the lack of reaction to her proposing extreme violence. And we are looking into the abyss, and it still doesn't register.
I think it doesn't register because people just assume that, as I'm sure people in America assumed a year or so ago, that that couldn't happen here. Well, Americans have found out that it can very easily, and I'm sure under different circumstances than we're experiencing now, it could here too.
I see it happening. I see no alternative. And at the same time, you know, your last hour in this climate, Starmer is enabled to do the things he's doing. The only hope we seem to have is Zach Polanski.
Well, he's really burst on the scene, and the popularity of the Greens has shot through the roof. And I think now the latest poll was that this is not the voting intention. It's who do you feel most positively about? And the Green Party is in the lead in London.
Well, thank God for that, because had he, and perhaps Ed Davis' party as well, had they been given any coverage in the last few years against reform, which is in the news relentlessly, we may not have been where we are now, Nick.
Good to hear from you, Rose. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. T says, for the first time in my life, I'm rethinking my future in the UK. I'm born and bred, as was my father, and my grandparents came over from India in the 1950s. This is what the shift to the far right by all parties is making me feel. I saw loads of flags put up today in my town, which just makes me feel angry. I guess that is what the racists want. Yeah, I drove through a place where somebody had obviously in the dead of night gone through and put a Union Jack flag just by one of its corners. They zip-tied it to lampposts all the way down the high street. which is just a fantastically stupid thing to do, because the council, at vast expense, that with, you know, money that they don't have, is just going to have to traipse after them and take them all down, because you can't have some desultory piece of material flapping through the air and potentially landing on people's windscreens, and with the result that they'll plough into boots. So, of course, they're going to have to take them down. But, yeah, it does make you feel as though, almost as though, your country is being taken from you by whoever shouts the loudest. Sudbury. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about a lot of issues, you know, the immigration and everything, or what to do about it, flying flags. I mean, the world has gone crazy as far as I'm concerned. The thing is, everyone's talking about ISIS and, you know, Trump's approach to all. Well, that's America. Every country has a different way of dealing with this, but we're Britain. Yeah, and we've always been a leader when it comes to sort of radical free thinking and sort of basically pulling the world forward. So the immigration side of things, you can't rip people away, you know, from their lives, their loved ones and what have you. That's just sort of, that's brutal. If you've got people in this country, whether you're coming illegally or, you know, you're a migrant, immigrant, you know, refugee, if you want to be here, I think whoever gets in after Starmer has got to set a date, a closing date, which basically says go to your local police office, station, get fingerprinted, get photographed, tell us about your lifestyle, where you came from, even declare any crimes you've been involved with. You will be considered. But for the meantime, we're going to have to ask you just to go back, and then we'll invite you back in for an interview. We'll do it humanely. So we're not saying no, we're not closing the door to everybody, but we need to find out exactly who we've got in this country and who is entitled. You know, because always, if you put violence to things, all you're going to get is a violent pushback.
Yeah, well,
you know, and then anarchy, chaos.
Hmm.
We're not seeing like the country that has a democracy that we pride ourselves on.
Yeah.
At the moment with Starmer, we don't feel like we were in a democracy. We feel like we're in a dictatorship. And I mean, if you pick a dictator, you've never seen a good one, have you?
Nobody acquires a vast amount of power and then uses it for good. Not generally.
I'll give everybody a 2-year tax release so they can catch up on all their bills. Yeah, get all that back on level pegging. But ask all the people all that millions and millions of pounds has been given away to these countries for what? We don't know. Deals made under the table all over the place for what? Who we don't know. I'd ask for that money back. I'd close the borders, put the boats out in the ocean, and I'd get like the army to literally just keep an eye on everything. Ask the police force to go look, unless it's actually a proper crime, but ask an ID of a people, you know, and arrest them for no ID. Come on, I mean, This is not fair. Taking people's right to speak away is not fair. Everybody's living in fear. If they say the wrong thing, if they do the wrong thing, that's not the country we all want to live in. You know, we want to have our voice and say, is it valid your opinion? To go, no, right, we'll shut him out. If it's valid, it's got purpose, it's got meaning, and it's not going to destroy any lives, yeah, you say what you want to say.
All right, good to hear from you, Joe. Some interesting ideas in there, some eminently sensible. Some might be more difficult to actually enact. What are your thoughts? 0345-6060-973. Charles says, following Kemi Badenoch's comments, please don't forget that the ECHR is Winston Churchill's legacy. This cannot be disputed. Yes, the poster boy for the right wing primarily responsible for the European Court of Human Rights after the Second World War. It seems odd that they would people who would want a picture of Churchill on their wall would willingly tear up one of his key achievements. Strange days indeed. Golders Green, Ari.
Yeah. It's all this talk about the ECHR, Badenoch making the ECHR her new agenda. It's just a desperate play of petty politics to try and wring back some of those voters they lost to reform. It's not going to... In my opinion, it's cringe and Badenoch's lost it. The Tories are over. Reform's the new right-wing party. And if we talk about, let's talk about immigration. Let's focus on immigration. In 2000, Tony Blair created an immigration crisis. He let the terrorist that killed the Jews in Manchester, Jihad al-Shami, right. he let him into the country.
So Tony Blair did no such thing. I mean, you're making it sound like he personally ushered him in. That's actually not what happened. Ari, you know that. But I understand people's concern about immigration. I'm not sure that one right-wing political party trying to top the other with the amount of people that they will deport is actually anything other than this a risible and desperate attempt for votes, for popularity. I mean, Reform have said that they're going to deport 600,000 people. if they do that, I'm a Knickerbocker glory with cream on top. They just won't. It's just ludicrous. And then the Conservatives will say, well, I see your 600,000 and I'll top it to a million. And on it will go. It's just, it's not really serious stuff. It's trying to present a simplistic solution to a problem that is much more difficult than either side is prepared to admit. Because people aren't really interested in complicated solutions to complicated problems. They want somebody to come along with a magic wand and make it all better. And I think that's probably how we should treat both Reform's plans and the ones that have just been announced by the Tory party. Unless you know otherwise. 0345 6060 973. Okay, more of your thoughts on this to come. But immediately after the news, are you tired of the main political party's authoritarianism? Well, Zach Polanski of the Greens certainly is. One of his latest proposals is to legalise all drugs. All of them. Is this a good idea? 0345 6060 973. Just past 11:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The Conservatives are due to claim a future Tory government would save £47 billion of taxpayers' money by cutting spending on welfare, social housing and aid. The announcement's due to come from the Shadow Chancellor Mel Stride at the party's conference tomorrow. The Board of Deputies of British Jews has accused protesters supporting the banned group Palestine Action of almost gloating over the Manchester synagogue attack. It's also calling on the hundreds of people arrested on Saturday to be investigated for stirring up racial hatred. And six people have been arrested in connection with the death of a man in the East Midlands during the early hours of this morning. Police were called to a house in Leicester by paramedics just before 2 a.m. LBC weather, rain in the north but drier elsewhere with some clear spells, remaining breezy as well with a low of around 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What? Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist?
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville, made to be enjoyed, not endured.
Are you a London black cab driver thinking of ways to boost your earnings during those quieter times? Why not consider Uber? We can give your meter a wake-up call. Join close to 1,000 black cab drivers already on Uber. Black cabs on Uber are priced by your meter, and the service fee will be no more than 5% until the end of 2025. Turn downtime into prime time. Go to uber.com/blackcabs to start earning today. Terms and conditions apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
The leader of the Green Party says that he wants to legalise all drugs, calling for an approach that he called led by public health experts, not politicians. Zach Polanski called for the legalisation of all drugs, including Class A drugs like heroin and crack cocaine. He said the war on drugs has absolutely failed, and ultimately we need to be having a public health approach. Now, this is after the United Nations last year, their human rights chief, called on leaders and international stakeholders to radically rethink global drug policy, saying that the decades-long war on drugs approach had destroyed countless lives and damaged entire communities. Let's talk about this with Professor Ian Hamilton, who is Senior Lecturer in Addiction and Mental Health at York University and joins us on the line now. Good evening, Professor.
Good evening, Nick. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What's your position on this?
Well, I broadly support this position. This was something the Liberal Democrats floated a few years ago. But of course, with no chance of power, I guess in some ways it was a relatively easy thing to do. I think what's changed this time is that given that politics is so fractured and splintered, there is a possibility that the Green Party could go into coalition in 4 years' time with another party and press for this to become reality. So I don't think this is maybe as far-fetched as it sounds.
But it does sound far-fetched, though, doesn't it? But in this country, other countries have their own rules. But in this country, it seems that almost on a yearly basis, governments instigate reviews and studies which almost always recommend a change in drug policy, and the government at the time has always refused to act on those recommendations. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think for many politicians, including the current administration, they fear public opinion. But actually, polling is quite positive on this. So I think there is broadly public support for the regulation of drugs. I don't think what the public want is a free-for-all, and I don't think that's what any government would deliver. I think what we're looking at is regulation. In the same way, we don't have free-for-all with tobacco and alcohol. You know, there are restrictions on who, where and when people can access those drugs. So I think what we're looking at from the Green Party in particular, their proposal, is that we should allow the regulation of drugs, but that, as I say, would come with certain restrictions as well as access. So, you know, for instance, minimum age limits, where, who and when could supply these drugs, etc. So I don't think we're looking at the Wild West of drugs when it comes to this. We're looking at something that's a bit more contained and set up, and also to ensure that people are kept safe, or as safe as possible.
You know, some countries have already experimented with the legalization or decriminalization of drugs to one extent or another. And one of the first and one of the most all-encompassing was Portugal.
That's right.
What do you know of the results of that experiment in Portugal?
Well, essentially, what the Green Party are proposing is very similar to what's actually happened in Portugal. And that policy change happened a few years ago. What the Green Party are talking about is taking a public health approach to drugs. So looking at how you minimise risk and improve the chances of people not getting into serious health problems with drugs. So in Portugal, what we've seen is a reduction in drug-related deaths, whereas in the UK, we've seen a rise in drug-related deaths. And unfortunately, Scotland has the highest rate of drug-related deaths in Europe. So I think when you contrast the two countries, we can clearly see that Portugal's made some headway. And again, Portugal's put in place very interesting things. So, for instance, although people won't be arrested for using drugs, they will be encouraged to attend treatment if they have problems. So at the same time Portugal has regulated drugs and decriminalised them, they've also invested in treatment and public health messaging. So the two have gone in parallel rather than just, changing the policy on drugs alone.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about death rates. I note that since 1993, the death rate, the mortality rates for drug poisoning has doubled. Why is that?
In the UK, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, well, what we've seen is we've got a cohort of aging, mainly heroin users. So they're because of their drug use and the way they're using drugs, they're at particular risk of overdose. And at the same time, what we've seen is a reduction in treatment services and the funding of treatment. So those two things together, I think, have contributed very heavily towards this increase in drug-related deaths. And unfortunately, we're seeing year on year record rises in deaths. And last year, we saw that, in fact, sorry, 2 years ago, we saw that drug-related deaths actually overtook road fatalities in terms of the number of deaths in this country, which was a really shocking place to be, really. And if you think about the way we've reduced deaths due to driving, what we've done is we've put in place safety measures rather than banning driving. So I would draw that analogy with drugs. It's not banning drugs that will reduce deaths. It's about ensuring that people are safe and have access to treatment when they need it.
Yeah, I mean, is there something to be said for the fact, well, it's not a fact, but is there something to be said for the idea that it's the banning of the drugs itself that is causing much of this damage?
Absolutely, you know, without a doubt. And I think we have to be honest with ourselves. Decriminalising drugs and regulating drugs won't remove the black market altogether, but it will certainly reduce the harm that the black market does and the banning of drugs and the, you know, unintended, I guess, consequences of that. So I think, you know, as long as we're honest with ourselves, it would be so good if politicians reflected that and were also honest about the opportunities and the choices that they make with regards to policy and how they can turn these record numbers of deaths and start reducing them. And Scotland, I think, has led the way with this, with thinking about things like drug consumption rooms or safe injecting facilities. But that's been blocked in a large part by Westminster, who don't want to see that happen.
Has the nature of the drugs that people are taking changed recently? I'm thinking particularly of fentanyl, which is kind of like heroin, but about up to 100 times more powerful. And, of course, you don't know what you've taken in an illegal market until you've taken it.
Exactly. And I guess that adds to the case for decriminalising drugs, in that there would be some degree of quality control. So you could check the potency of drugs and you could assure people that are using those drugs that, you know, they know how strong a drug is and what it contains. I mean, I think we've been fortunate with regards to fentanyl in the sense that we haven't seen the number of fentanyl deaths in the way that we have in America, for instance. In North America, we see hundreds of thousands of people continuing to die due to fentanyl and other opiates. But in this country, we do continue to have problems with heroin and cocaine. And this week, we saw a record number of people die or reported deaths, rather, due to ketamine, another drug that's increasing in popularity but is causing problems. Not least of all, people unfortunately losing their lives earlier than they should.
Well, the sort of granddaddy of the illegal drug market is marijuana. Many European countries and most American states have legalized or for recreational use or medicinal use. What's been their experience? Because there were all sorts of scare stories before they did that it would, increase consumption and so on. So what was the reality then?
Well, what we've witnessed in North America, particularly in those states that have regulated cannabis and marijuana, is that you initially see an upsurge in use, but then that declines fairly quickly after that. So a lot of that is to do just with the the exposure and the news, etc., of a particular state decriminalizing cannabis. But what we've also seen is that that's taken money out of the black market, and the revenues raised by cannabis in these states in America has been substantial. And what surprises me is, given the economic state that we're in this country, is, even from a moral point of view, if you don't agree with deregulation of cannabis, why we haven't seen the economic argument for regulating cannabis and the government being able to increase its revenue from the tax take on cannabis sales, for instance.
Yes, am I right in thinking that it would also affect the prison population? I mean, our jails are famously near full, yet a significant number of prisoners are in there for drug offences, marijuana offences. There counts about 1,000 people in our jails. Wouldn't that be a positive effect of at least legalising marijuana?
Absolutely. And you think of the effect that having, never mind going to prison, but, you know, being arrested for having cannabis on you, the effect that has, particularly on young people in terms of their ability to travel, for instance, or employment, etc. And we know that there's a disproportionate number of young black men who are affected by the laws on cannabis in this country. It's that group in particular that seems to be disproportionately stopped and searched, for instance, and then face criminal convictions for possession of cannabis. So there's a racial element to this as well as a kind of wider moral and, as I say, economic argument.
But there's also a mental health argument that some people put forward. People talk of the possible effects on people's mental health of marijuana use. But am I right in thinking that alcohol poses such risks as well, and yet they are pretty much ignored by the government?
Absolutely. You know, every drug carries risks with it. But I think you're absolutely right, Nick. One of the things that isn't mentioned or talked about enough is the damage that alcohol does in this country. The number of premature deaths there are due to alcohol. Again, we see record numbers of the harm that alcohol causes, both in terms of fatalities, but also hospital admissions. So again, an argument for regulating cannabis is that you could actually help reduce the mental health problems associated with cannabis, things like cannabis psychosis or dependence, because what you could do is, when you regulate a drug, you can control the quality of it and also the potency of it. It's been the increasing potency of cannabis over the last 10, 20 years that has caused many people problems. And when you're faced with the black market, you might only have the choice of one type of strength of cannabis, whereas in a regulated market, you get competition, you get variety, and you get, you know, variations in strength, which, you know, help reduce problems.
And just finally, do you recognise that when people are talking about this, particularly politicians, they always talk about drug abuse and drug dependency, but isn't it true that people use drugs and function perfectly well in society, just as people smoke tobacco and drink alcohol?
Absolutely. There's a complete bias towards the problems that drugs cause. And, you know, that's not to minimise the impact that has on those individuals and those families. But we talk far less about the pleasure and the value and the benefits of drugs than we do the problems that they cause. And you see that in research. You know, it's very difficult to get funding for research that looks, you know, for instance, into the pleasure and the benefits of drugs. And as you say, there are many people who are functional drug users. It has no impact on their employment, on their work, on their families, on their relationships. But that doesn't tend to be the focus of, you know, certainly media discussion and wider discussion around drugs.
Very good to talk to you, Professor. Thanks so much for that. That's Professor Ian Hamilton, Senior Lecturer in Addiction and Mental Health at York University. Now, we're going to take a short break. We're going to hear from our reporter who is at the Tory Party conference for a little background reveal about what is happening or what has happened there today. And we're going to come back to your thoughts about what is being proposed at the Tory Party conference, Kemi Badenoch announcing that a Conservative government under her leadership would pull the UK out of the European Convention on Human Rights and start mass deportations. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Terror at the synagogue.
Everybody else! He has to fall! Go away!
He's got a bomb on that!
The attack in Manchester on Yom Kippur brings the rising tide of anti-Semitism into sharp focus. I spoke exclusively with Israeli President Isaac Herzog.
This heat wave of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish feelings all over the world at the end reaches bloodshed.
But is the government doing enough to tackle anti-Jewish hate?
Anybody who breaks the laws of our land, they must face the full force of the law.
Anything but a United Kingdom. So where does the country go from here?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the LBC app.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. Play today with the Chicken Big Mac. So you can win big while tucking into the three layers of soft bun with delicious gherkins, the iconic Big Mac sauce, and crispy tender chicken patties. Go on, it's your go. From 11 a.m. until the 21st of October. Participating in restaurants. Subject to availability. App may be required. 18 plus. UK. See mcdrules.co.uk.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears. Give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet. She's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The Conservative Party conference is underway. LBC's political reporter in Manchester is Natasha Clark. Hello, Natasha.
Hello, good evening.
So, what's the mood like at the Tory Party conference this time?
So, Nick, I think, actually, I was expecting people to be a little bit more downbeat than they are. But people I've been speaking to this evening, I think the mood is more a little bit despondent. And it's fair to say that people aren't feeling hugely optimistic. But it's not quite as dire as I was expecting. Now, some of the MPs that I've been chatting to, look, they do recognise that they are in a bit of a bind right now. They do recognise that Kemi Badenoch is not doing particularly well, whether that's in the polls, of course, when, you know, you're looking at the Tory party on 15-16%, but also, of course, amongst their own MPs, there is a lot of disquiet about Kemi Badenoch's leadership and the direction of travel that she currently is taking the Tory party in. And obviously, this is her first party conference, Nick. It's important to just say that, because this time last year, she wasn't even elected. So this is her first party conference. Some people are saying, is this going to be her last party conference? Because such is the disquiet of MPs and how they feel about how she is doing. So this conference really is about two things. Basically saying to the country, we have listened to you, we have changed. You heard that from her in her speech earlier today when she was addressing the opening of the Tory party conference, basically saying, look, we have listened to you, we acknowledge that we did make a lot of mistakes when we were in government on the economy, on immigration, we are a changed party. But also the second thing, obviously, to say to her party, give me more time. I know things aren't perfect. I know things aren't going according to plan. But actually, I've had a few wins in the past year. Keir Starmer isn't doing very well. Angela Rayner is gone. Lord Mandelson is gone. The economy is not doing very well. And I am the person to take on Sir Keir Starmer. But equally, you've got Nigel Farage, on the other hand, doing incredibly well in the polls. Reform doing incredibly well amongst the general public. So really, the stakes, I don't think, could not be higher for Kemi Badenoch. Potentially even higher than for Keir Starmer at his last party conference, Labour Party conference, just last week.
And how was that speech received?
You know what, I was speaking to some sort of members earlier today and they sort of were saying, you know, this is a good first start. We'll wait to see what she says in her main big conference address, which will be taking place on Wednesday. So I think they were quite cautiously hopeful that something big might be coming from Kemi Badenoch. However, the people I was speaking to a couple of weeks ago were not of that persuasion. They think it's all about trying to win back that trust as opposed to making these really big, bold policy announcements. And one member I was speaking to earlier says, look, Kemi's speech has absolutely got to be a barnstormer on Wednesday, or she is going to face letters of no confidence incredibly soon, because it's just a few weeks away before her year of safety net, essentially, so no one can challenge her for the Tory leadership in the first year. After that has run out, there are Tory MPs that are seriously thinking about putting those letters of no confidence into her. Now, will there be enough to have a leadership contest, and will they all go now? I think the feeling from the people I've been speaking to is probably not. It's probably more likely that they are going to wait and see how the local elections go, give her another sort of 6 months or so, 8 months or so, to really try to get a grip on things. However, if things are as bad as they are expected to be in Wales, in Scotland, in those local elections that are coming next week, then Kemi Badenoch is going to have a real, real problem on her hands if she continues to do as badly as she's doing now.
What about Robert Jenrick? Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him yet, no. He's been appearing at a few fringe events, and a few of my journalist colleagues have been following him around. But equally, people I speak to don't believe that he is in a position right now that he doesn't want to use now to make any form of sort of leadership challenge to sort of agitate at all. It's his big speech to the party conference on Tuesday. Everybody will be eagle-eyed. Every single fringe event that he goes to, that James Cleverly, the shadow housing secretary, goes to, looking for any whiff of whether there's any mischief being made by these two men who could potentially, if Kemi Badenoch falls, they will be the men to replace her.
And would we expect previous prime ministers to show up in any form?
Are you talking about Liz Truss, potentially?
Well, she was the bottom of my list.
I think Liz Truss would be very, very unwelcome here. Even Kemi Badenoch this afternoon was incredibly dismissive of Liz Truss and her mini-budget, saying, never again can we throw away the keys to that trust of the public finances. And, under my watch, we will not be announcing spending cuts of this and spending, £150 billion without saying how we're going to pay for it. So I don't think we're going to be seeing hide nor hair of Liz Truss, as opposed to other previous prime ministers. Haven't heard anything from Boris Johnson about him being here. Of course, he is still a part of the Tory party, and many members here would love to see Boris Johnson come back, but I really just don't think it's going to happen, Nick. Rishi Sunak, again, probably not the party that he will, party conference that he will attend. Obviously, his last one was very much passing over the baton to Kemi Badenoch, but I imagine we probably won't see much of him at all.
Very good to talk to you, Natasha. Thanks so much for that. That's Natasha Clark, LBC's political reporter in Manchester. Now, in Manchester, as part of Kemi Badenoch's first address, she announced that if she were elected, we would see the removals force. This is a force that she has modelled on the ICE agents in America. The removals force in this country would be given £1.6 billion and sweeping new powers, including the use of facial recognition without warning to spot immigrants. She says the force will be expected to integrate closely with the police. The removals force, that's what she's calling it, is modelled on the US Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the ICE agency, which the Conservatives said had provided a successful approach in removing illegal immigrants. Well, they have provided a successful approach in gassing and assaulting American citizens, pulling children into the street from their beds and zip-tying them together, attacking journalists and shooting protesters. I wonder which part of that she admires the most. Chelsea, hello, Mark.
Yeah, hello. So, firstly, with the deportation plan, there are a number of countries that just don't accept them, Afghanistan and Iran. As an example, and where do you take them? Farage said the Ascension Islands, but the thing is, it's like eating swans. You don't really know if this is black and white written in stone. And if you have a letter signed on behalf of the second most powerful man in British politics, the Home Secretary, with the coat of arms of His Majesty the King, representing HMG, that says you have indefinite leave to remain or refugee status, if that can be torn up by either of these two parties, Conservative or Reform, is sending a message to small investors and big investors in the UK, rather like the pharmaceutical company that withdrew $1 billion, to say, we don't know if the word of this government in the UK is worth the paper it's written on. And that's the sort of thing that's usually associated with tin pot third world countries and dictatorships. The word of the UK HMG government usually is right up there with the best.
Yes.
Switzerland, whatever.
That is right. People have indefinitely to remain, and some politicians have recently said that that may be torn up. But how can you do that if unless words don't mean anything anymore? Indefinite leave to remain means just that. How can it mean something else depending on who happens to be in power at the time? Good to talk to you, Mark. I'm really sorry I couldn't get to everybody's call in this hour, but there will be plenty of opportunities to talk about this on LBC in the near future. I'm going to change it after the news. This is interesting. The private equity owner of Morrison's, the supermarket giant, will start monitoring shop floor staff with a tracking app to supposedly root out slow workers, stating it is designed to help teams understand their own performance. Office workers, though, have been found to waste or spend 26% of their time not working. Not escaping productivity overwatch, those working from home have their computer mouse checked for continued activity. To get around this, they purchase something called a mouse jiggler, which has the appearance of them actually at work, even if they aren't. But what's the effect on staff placed under such conditions? Are you working under Big Brother's observation? 0345 6060 973 LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight. The Conservatives are promising to make stringent cuts to the UK's welfare bill if they can win the next election. They say £47 billion of taxpayers' money would be recovered by reducing benefit spending and also limiting the amount allocated to social housing and aid. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has been looking through the proposals.
The parties say they will tackle the spiralling welfare bill, cut the bloated civil service and reduce foreign aid expenditure even further. Benefits would be stopped for people with low mental health problems, according to the Tories, and only British people would be able to access welfare. That will save £8 billion too by cutting civil service numbers down to 2016 levels. They'll also slash another £7 billion from the foreign aid budget. But Labour says the Tories let welfare bills and asylum hotel bills rocket under their watch.
President Trump says early talks with Hamas on ending the war in Gaza have been advancing rapidly. He's made the claim ahead of meetings between teams from Israel and the Palestinian organisation expected in Egypt later on. But the foreign affairs analyst Jasmine El-Gamal says Donald Trump could get a rude awakening.
President Trump is not an expert in the region. He's not engaged in the nuances. And so to him, this might seem like a straightforward thing. Release the hostages, end the war. But of course, the details are still really contentious, and I don't think he appreciates how contentious.
The Home Secretary is urging people to stand united following what's thought to be an arson attack on a mosque in East Sussex. Police are treating the fire at Peacehaven on Saturday night as a hate crime. Half a dozen people have been arrested by police in Leicester, investigating the death of a man. Per police investigations been underway in the city since Sunday morning. More now from LBC's Midlands correspondent, George Ike.
Officers were called to a house on Sawley Street by paramedics at around 1:37 a.m. A man in his 30s was discovered inside with a stab wound. Six people have been arrested, one man aged 44 on suspicion of murder, five others aged between 24 and 53 on suspicion of assisting an offender. All remain in police custody. George Ike, LBC, Leicester.
And Sainsbury's and Argos are to hire around 19,000
1,000 extra workers to help deal with Christmas. The two brands are both part of the same group. They'll begin a new recruitment drive later on today. LBC weather, rain in the north but drier elsewhere with clear spells developing as well. Remaining breezy but feeling milder with a low of around 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Earlier on, we were talking about the restriction of our freedoms. Surveillance state is part of that, and it's part of this story as well. Morrison's, the supermarket giant, will start monitoring shop floor staff with a tracking app to root out slow workers as the supermarket races to revive its fortunes. The private equity owner retailer is rolling out the new tool for hundreds of store managers so they can see how quickly staff in their stores are stacking shelves on a real-time basis. The new system, dubbed a stop-watching approach by workers, flags which members of staff are slower than their peers in unloading food onto shelves, allowing managers to target those supposedly not pulling their weight. Which is not how Morrison's put it. They said that the new app would help identify opportunities to coach our colleagues and understand where additional support and training may be required. Let's talk about this with Fevzi Turkalp. Fevzi is a technology journalist, editor of GadgetDetective.com and host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Hello, Fevzi.
Morning.
This seems quite sinister. What do you make of this?
Well, I looked into this software because I thought it was going to be really high tech with cameras and AI and all the rest of it. Turns out the system allocates tasks to individuals and they have to hit one button for stop and one button for when, you know, start. So it is what the workers have said. It's a stop watching app. But what it does is it gives sort of managers the ability to micromanage, I would suggest. And I think that they should be careful what they wish for when people game the system. You don't always get better outcomes. You get changes in behavior designed to appear to be meeting the targets.
Well, if the people themselves are going to be the ones that set the targets, then it would occur to me, if I was one of those workers, then while I was... while I had the stopwatch in my possession, I would work very, very slowly in order to set that template, which I could easily meet in the future.
And also, people will be compared against their peers. So, you know, there is the opportunity for collusion there as well. Everyone can be more or less uniformly slow. A tendency to push the start button late and the finish button early. Although if you do that too much, you'll just get tasks stacking up on you. It's not a pleasant thing. It is a trend we're seeing. It's quite primitive what Morrison's are doing, and there are more sophisticated systems out there, but with all of them there's always a potential for falsification, employee stress, morale decline, risk of discrimination. Some of these systems actually inadvertently discriminate against certain groups, and people trying to game the system. So, and there are the legal things about it as well, I guess. You know, you've got to make sure that these systems meet GDPR regulations. You have to do an impact assessment. You're meant to tell your staff what you're doing, why it's necessary, what data is being collected, and for what reason. And that might mitigate some of the issues that staff have with it. But, you know, ultimately, when you watch people that closely, you don't always get better results.
Yes. Do you think it's the tech aspect of this that is grating on people? Because staff have always been overseen to some degree or another.
Yeah, I think it's the ability... See, sometimes detail is mistaken for more information. More data is not necessarily more information. And yes, people don't like being tracked by technology, and it is very big brother. I would suggest also, if we are going to do these systems, we need to have another tier of surveillance on the managers to make sure that they're, I'm not joking, to make sure that they're not using the data in a discriminatory or unfair way.
Right.
Because it's very possible to get a uniform set of data out and then for an individual's own biases to take effect in how they deal with that data against one member of staff compared to another. There are positive ways in which this could be used. It could be used for supporting growth and coaching, but I rather think that that it's more to do with enforcement of rules.
Yeah, it might not only be the way that the information is used that might be subject to bias. It might be the actual programs themselves, because they don't come from nothing. Computers are programmed by individuals who all have their own set of biases. And this has come up time and time again. Computer programs that are supposed to be even-handed aren't, because the person that wrote them isn't.
Or the data that they've been trained on is often the problem. So you get algorithmic biases where data is fed into systems that's based on human beings that have behaved in a biased way, and therefore the computer learns that bias, which is why you remember those cases of AIs turning fascist when exposed to human beings,
right.
Essentially. there's also technological reasons for this. I mean, facial recognition systems work less well on black people and people with darker skin. It's just literally to do with the contrast of the image and the ability to recognize. So people can be misrecognized. And we've had that conversation in the context of law enforcement, of course, more black people being misrecognized by systems and suffering for that. But there are all sorts of factors that can, technological factors that can give rise to discrimination. So all in all, employers have got a right not to be cheated either, right? There are people who work at home who are not working when they're meant to be working, and it's very hard to spot it. But I would say that whilst you can measure these sort of measurables, that really you have to find a more sophisticated approach to look at the outcomes. Some people may not be doing many hours of active work, but what they do might be pure gold.
Yes, quite.
And, you have to look at that. So, and it's not only sort of shop staff that are being faced with this. PwC, which is one of the biggest management consultancy firms in the world, has a rule that says you're meant to spend at least 60% working in the office and only 40% working from home.
Right.
And they're using a sort of traffic light system.
Yes, they are.
To monitor people as they, check in and check out. And they're looking at their use of their mobile phones and working out where they are. And people don't like that. That's not going to be good for retention unless, of course, everyone does it. It's a bit like when all the banks treat you equally appallingly, then you can't, what you lose, you gain, as it were.
Yes. So, that's right. PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, have said that they've introduced this traffic-like dashboard, and a senior PwC staff member told the Financial Times that they had lost count of the number of colleagues who had raised concerns about it. Another said employees had sought more transparency as the firm began pushing hard to improve office attendance. But you're quite right. Whether you're there or not it doesn't really make any difference if you're not actually achieving very much by your presence. But some people can do in an hour what it takes others 3 hours to do.
Yeah.
But if they're being monitored, then the person who, oddly and ironically, it would be the person who takes longer to do the task, but is present for more hours, they would be the one that would be, more likely to be promoted, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, it is very difficult. I mean, it's a general truth that when you start measuring something, people game the system to make sure. I mean, look at A&E departments. A&E departments were set at a deadline of saying that everyone must be put through triage, treated, either admitted or sent home within 4 hours, if you remember. So what did that result in? It resulted in them not accepting people through the door until they got their enough people through the system. So they were then waiting inside ambulances outside hospitals because the clock didn't start, the 4 hours didn't start ticking until they walked in through the door.
Yes.
So the hospital was gaming the system. What was the result? Patients were not being treated any more quickly, and ambulances were being held up for hours in car parks outside hospitals. So it had unintended consequences.
Yes, quite predictable consequences. I think one of the stipulations was that you can't spend more than 4 hours in A&E. And so at the four-hour mark, they were just pushed into a corridor, and then they weren't in A&E anymore. Problem solved.
Or not let in the door in the first place.
Yeah.
When they arrived, for fear that the 4 hours would start, which it would. So as long as they're in the car park in an ambulance outside, the 4 hours hasn't started. So they're appearing to meet the deadline, as it was. The deadline has been scrapped, I think. But, so you have to be very careful what you test for. I do think, just from a technological point of view, that AI systems will improve in leaps and bounds, so that they will be able to assess meaningful performance of people in far more sophisticated ways. And of course, you know where this is going. The ultimate goal here will be to have AI systems managing the human staff whilst there are still human staff. And then I'm not sure whether AIs will require management or not. They probably will. So we'll have AIs managing AIs, and we'll sit at home and watch daytime television.
Well, I mean, it's funny, but that's actually really alarming. So our future is that we will be wealth-creating units while our relevance is still remains, overseen by robots. I mean, what about that? Sounds like a good future.
Well, it won't be for very long, so don't worry about that. I mean, they only become our dark overlords for a while, until the value of human labour drops to zero, and then we are not in the workforce anymore. I mean, it is a bit like, I always think about chimpanzees in this context. What is the value of a chimpanzee's labour in our economy? Nil.
You're actually waiting for me to respond.
The correct answer is nil. They do not work in our economy, save for one or two that sit around in zoos and look pretty.
Yeah.
But that is because there's essentially nothing they can do in our economy that we can't do better. They can either not do it at all or not as well. And therefore, they don't form a part of our economy. In the same way, when AIs develop to a point where they can do everything that we can do but better, and they have a physical form in the form of, you know, robotics or whatever that physical form is, where it's necessary, then what need do they have of us to have an economy? So at the best outcome is that we will have a human economy and an AI economy, but I do fear that the purpose of a human economy will be unnecessary.
Yeah, Morrisons say that they are using this technology because shoppers switched to rivals. Yeah. Well, do rivals use this technology?
Well, Lidl use it in France. Actually, this particular program, they use it. I've eaten Morrison's products, and I don't want to defame them, but I think that they might concentrate on the quality of their products, for example. And by the way, a bunch of their stores failed food hygiene tests, with some of them scoring zero, which is quite hard to score zero on a food hygiene. So, you know, that 1 to 5 system that you see.
I've never seen a zero. Maybe it's because restaurants and shops don't prefer to put the poster in the window showing that they have a zero rating.
Well, I'm always surprised that they're willing to put up ones that show 3 out of 5. Mm. I mean, why would you do that? I mean, it's, unless you're required to put it up, I'm not sure. But, I think, you know, not just Morrison's, but managers might look to themselves before they start blaming shelf stackers.
Yes, well, exactly right. I mean, it seems unlikely that the management who are instigating this policy will themselves subject themselves to being overseen by an app. I very much doubt it, but perhaps we don't know.
We might end up with Russian dolls, you know, with each.
Yes. Is this our future, though? Constant monitoring by computers and robots until those robots eventually take the jobs that they are overseeing?
Yes, and then there'll be monitors as well, and it'll serve them right. But, I think it is our future. I mean, because with humans, that we've never invented technologies that we haven't used, right, up to nuclear weapons. Mm. It's not in our nature to say, well, we've invented this. We're not going to find a way of using and or abusing it. So I think it is there, and there will be benefits. I mean, things like health monitoring, the ability to spot, you know, cancers and neurological disorders well before we would normally spot them, and the ability to do something about them, that's hugely important. But at the same time, to have a computer system monitoring us, assessing us, and being in control, it's not really a future I want to live in, to be honest with you.
You know, it's always been like this, though, isn't it? As I mentioned before, workers are always overseen to some extent. Is it actually not sinister at all? It's just a completely logical use of new technology that has become available.
I think it depends on to what degree you are monitored and what that data is then used for. As I say, if it's used for, helping someone grow and improve and investing in people's careers, that's one sort of thing. But if it's purely punitive, then that's going to have a devastating effect on morale. People don't like it. I mean, there has to be a balance. As I say, employers have rights to get value for their money and not to be cheated by employees or stolen from by employees. But equally, people are humans and need to be given a degree of autonomy and shown a degree of trust.
And just finally, do you think that the legislation is actually lagging the development of artificial intelligence, that we need some sort of catch-up on the law to protect people from exploitation and abuse?
I think it is lagging, and I think it will also always lag because of the rate at which technology develops as opposed to the rate at which we can understand problems and legislate for them. But notwithstanding that, I actually think that many companies are not complying with their data obligations already under the GDPR and other laws. So I think the first step would be to make sure you get full compliance legally. And the legal standards should be the bare minimum of what employers and companies achieve. You know, that's the point at which you do something illegal. That shouldn't be the standard that we set for our corporations. Our corporations should try and invest in people and use that information to help the staff, to help themselves. And it's very easy to say, this is quite difficult to strike the right balance. But that's why, you know, if you're going to monitor anyone in a business, it should be your managers.
Thanks. Thanks very much for that, Fevzi. That's Fevzi Turkalp, technology journalist, editor of GadgetDetective.com. and host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Now we're going to take a short break and come back with your thoughts about this. Does this sound sinister to you, or is it actually just perfectly reasonable for a company to want to monitor what its staff are doing at all times? 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IFIs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, we're talking about this story of Morrison's, the supermarket giant, which will start monitoring shop floor staff with a tracking app to root out slow workers as the supermarket tries to revive its fortunes. And as we've just been hearing, it seems a bit rudimentary, the app that they're going to be using, a sort of a glorified stopwatch. But it can't be too long before everybody is monitored all the time at work with facial recognition technology and location devices and all of the rest of it. Is this a future that you think is actually perfectly reasonable because companies want to get the best out of their workers? Or do you think it's just a bit sinister? Paddington, hello, Sal.
Good evening, morning. Where are we now? The algorithm will be able to tell me. The algorithm will be able to tell people how long it's taken them to go and take a loo break, how long it's taken them to go and buy their lunch, perhaps. This is just a step in the wrong direction and using all of the new technology in all of the worst possible ways. It's just going to put cat amongst the pigeons. When you're looking at other bits of attempts that the government is trying to move more disabled people back into work, a spreadsheet is just going to make everyone who has any particular needs that means that some of those things take longer, we're just going to look bad and we're going to hamper all of these attempts.
Yes, I mean, some companies have got into trouble about this. Amazon was fined €32 million in France for what was described as excessive surveillance of its workers. I mean, Amazon, for their part, said they strongly disagreed with the findings and called them factually incorrect. But
anecdotal evidence for the way they behave in some of their warehouses. I'm surprised they actually continue putting, toilets in them at all. Just get rid of it so that they've got a bit more shelter.
Well, I'm not sure it's got quite that bad, but the French Information Commission outlined a number of areas where it found Amazon had breached data protection regulation. This included a system with three alerts in place to monitor employee activity. One alert triggered if an item was scanned too quickly or less than 1.25 seconds after scanning a previous item. Another signal breaks of 10 minutes or more. A third track breaks between 1 and 10 minutes, a one-minute break. Amazon said they disagreed with these findings, but the fine was not small, €32 million. Thanks for that, Sal. 0345 6060 973. Matt says, you should work in a call centre like I do. Everyone is monitored in great detail by clever tech, but there are still a load of shirkers who get away with it. Yeah, I suppose the tech can only determine what is the correct period of time to take on a task by observing somebody doing it. And if that person who knows that they're being observed and they're setting a template for others to follow, the logical course of action would be to do that task as slowly as possible, which would be the opposite result to that which was intended. Coventry, Frieda.
Hello, young man.
Frieda.
I don't understand why. I don't know. You didn't ask the chap about what happens when people are completely replaced by robots, whether it's in Morrison's or anywhere else, because the profits from those companies will go to the companies. Yes, they'll pay tax, but nothing like the amount that gets involved with employees.
Yes.
So what are people supposed to live on if they've not got a job?
Well, it's a frightening future because AI technology is increasing at a stratospheric rate, and what it looks like our future it will be is some of us will have jobs oiling robots and the others will have nothing at all.
Well, the interesting thing is that many, many years ago, a book or a report was written called The Age of Leisure. And now it looks as though it's becoming a reality. But then you wonder, what are you supposed to eat? Or are they going to then dispose of the human race?
Well, if you read the wrong websites, you might come to the conclusion that they've started on that process already, Frieda.
I agree.
All right, thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Phil says, watch how people's mental health declines as AI watches us more and more. Yes. Well, PricewaterhouseCoopers, as we were talking about just a while ago, their employees, quite a lot of them, one staff member said that he'd lost count of the number of colleagues who had raised concerns about this, and it's... as we described, it's a sort of a traffic light dashboard which displays red when attendance in the office is below 40%, amber for 40 to 60%, and green when attendance is above 60%. But that implies, of course, that you do better work in the office, which I think our experiences of, you know, from the COVID pandemic has proven that it's not necessarily true, that people can be much more productive at home. And, of course, even the home is not free of oversight because there are programs that people have on their work computers that will track their activity. And, indeed, they will be monitored to see whether they're paying attention during those video work conference calls. It's kind of an alarming future that we're sort of blindly heading towards on the assumption that everything is going to work out fine. But I think it'll work out fine for some people, but perhaps not the most of us. Matt says, Nick, are you monitored? What do you do when the news and the ads are on? Swan around Leicester Square? No, Matt, I don't swan, I mooch. 0345 6060 973. Now, you will have noticed that we've had quite a lot of weather lately, most of it outside. And as Storm Amy became the first named storm of the season, people are wondering, have we seen the last of the good weather? Well, an expert will tell us all about that after this news headline break with Tim Daly.
The Conservatives are promising to make stringent cuts to the UK's welfare bill if they can win the next election. They say £47 billion of tax would be recovered by reducing benefit spending and also limiting the amount allocated to social housing and aid. President Trump says early talks with Hamas on ending the war in Gaza have been advancing rapidly. He's made the claim ahead of meetings between teams from Israel and the Palestinian organisation, expected in Egypt later. And Sainsbury's and Argos are to hire around 19,000 extra workers to help cope with Christmas. The two brands are part of the same group and will begin a new recruitment drive later on today. LBC weather, rain in the north but drier elsewhere with some clear spells, breezy and a low of around 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
If your client is not happy with the quality of your work and wants compensation because they allege it's amateurish, unprofessional and childlike, his cucks could help protect you. The story of your business, underwritten by his cucks business insurance. Subject to already holding a relevant Hiscox policy and subject policy eligibility, terms and conditions.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties, mess, tantrums and sleepless nights, all those yo-yos, action figures and shinies, lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years, let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. it could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Well, it's considerably calmer than it has been over the last few days. Let's talk about the weather that we have just had and the prospects for our immediate future with Jim Dale. He is founder and senior consultant at British Weather Services. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
So that was quite a storm, wasn't it? Where did that come from?
Yeah, it came from the ashes of Hurricane Umberto, literally the ashes. As that crossed the Atlantic, it died a death. And then as ashes do, they resurrected themselves. And, hey, presto, we got Storm Amy, the first of the season. I'm gonna give myself a pat on the back on this one because I saw that last Monday and I actually tweeted that we could well see 100 mile an hour winds, gusts, that is, by the time we get to Friday in the weekend. And hey, presto, it all happened. But, yeah, first of the season, probably not the last. But it's the last for now. I'll tell you a little bit more about that, what's coming in due course.
Is it about time for the first named storm or is it a bit early?
Yeah. No, I think October is, well, look, we had, I think it was Floris or whatever it was in August. Now that was, in the previous regimes of storms, so it didn't count for this one. But in terms of the season from now on in, yeah, it's about right. October normally delivers this sort of stuff. We've had a few big storms. You may remember 1987. I don't know whether you can or not, but certainly I did. 1987 and the Great Storm, and there's been others in 1990 and others since. So October's really the start of it, and you'd say normally March stroke April the end of it. So you can see plenty of time for us to get through the alphabet, and I think the last one is called Wubu or something. I don't think we're going to get there. Yeah, exactly. W for Wubu, but I don't think we're going to get there. We never have. Six storms is about the average. So that's number one.
And is it because of the sort of sort of cyclonic? That's probably not the right word. It probably means something specific, but I mean something more vague than that.
Cyclogenesis.
Well, the cycle of the winds, is that what has pulled the warmer air up from the south for us?
In a way, yes. Yeah, exactly. Normally what happens with storms of this nature, they come in from the Atlantic and you get the southerly drag just ahead of it. So you get some really nice, calm days with warm temperatures just before it rocks in, drags the southerlies in, and that's exactly what happened this time around. So that's not unusual. And the other thing that's not unusual is you mentioned already the calm after the storm. So we got the calm before the storm, we're getting the calm after the storm in these next couple of days. That's not unusual because what tends to happen is that low pressure gets filled by high pressure. It rushes in to fill the vacuum, if you like, to try and balance things out. That's physics for you. And and so we end up with you know, the calm coming after the storm as well as before, which is where we are now.
And there's been less in the news about extreme weather events worldwide. Is that because there haven't been many, or are we just busy concentrating on other nightmares?
Yeah, I think we're concentrating on other nightmares. You're going to have to look at what happened in Ibiza and Sicily this week, not that far away. And both of those holiday resort areas, tremendous amounts of rain. Look, if we're not getting it, somebody else is. You know, and there's been typhoons in the Far East, a couple of them, there's one going at the moment. So no, let's not think that nothing's just because we've just had our storm and it's gone away, you know, that it's not happening anywhere else. It definitely is. Record rainfall in Ibiza. Many people who've been to Ibiza will know exactly what I'm talking about in terms of saying, yeah, it's a holiday resort. You don't expect big things. But yeah, big things, record rainfall, and then the same thing, and that was an ex hurricane as well. To be honest, that was I've got to think of the name, Gabrielle, ex hurricane Gabrielle, went through a bit, not as a hurricane, as a storm, but this time it was rain rather than wind. So if you don't get one, you get the other. And it headed off to Sicily and did its stuff there as well. So yeah, let's not take our eye off the ball as far as you know, climate and climate change and these type of events going on around the world, because they are still happening.
Well, you must be getting this kind of information on a daily basis, much more so than, you know, the average Joe like me, which must make it a bit dispiriting that the sort of fight against net zero seems to be ramping up.
Yeah, it is dispiriting, but I stand on my feet and I shout a lot, because I think it's a curious thing. My company, British Weather Services, we've been around since 1987. We're independent, so we're able to say what we wish in terms of the political side of things. So when the politics comes into climate, I'm able to say, yeah, that's okay or that's not okay. The Met Office, on the other hand, they've got to be very neutral. They can't go political, so that you don't hear them shouting. So in a way, Nick, I kind of think, unofficially, I represent a lot of meteorologists out there. I know a lot of them that say, yeah, you're doing a good job in terms of making sure that the agenda is out there in terms of saying what's actually happening from a scientific point of view, rather than the social media point of view, which is coming from the other angle, and some of the politics that we're now seeing. And you may be hinting at what Kemi Badenoch's been saying about net zero in the last day or so, saying, look, this is a real dilemma for her, because on the one hand, she's agreeing that man-made climate change is a real and present danger. Fair enough. That's absolutely right. And I think she's held that position for a long time. On the other hand, I'm going to ditch net zero. So kind of what's the answer then? What are you doing, you know, to negate the risk, to mitigate the risk, if you're not going to follow net zero in any shape or form? It doesn't make sense. And I think what's happening is she's following Farage. Now, Farage himself, I've had three interviews with Farage. I probably said this before, but I actually believe Nigel Farage does not follow the same line as Richard Tice and Zian Youssef in terms of their denial. They shout it from the rooftops that it's garbage, etc. On the other hand, Nigel Farage doesn't. He says he doesn't know.
He says that a lot. He does not know.
Yeah, it's a bit of a cop-out for a so-called leader. Yeah. But you see, I in those interviews, one of the interviews he actually said to me, you know, before we actually spoke, he said, let's not talk climate change, please. Can we not talk? I'm thinking, what are we going to talk about then? You know, the roses in the garden or what? Because I think deep down he knows. He said he's an environmentalist. He said that online, on air as well. No, he's not. Of course he's not. You can't be a climate denier or somebody who doesn't appreciate what's going on. And also, by the way, in favour of fox hunting. And if you are a environmentalist, you cannot be. It does not fit.
Do you think that the people are actually have decided on this, and it's the politicians that are lagging? And for evidence of that, I would point to both the increasing popularity of the Green Party, the rejection of all of this you know, net zero is a scam nonsense that some of the people that you've mentioned come out with, but also the sales of electric vehicles have hit an all-time high.
Have hit a record, in this month just gone by. So there's another thing I'm going to mention now, which is a little bit bigger, and that is a poll that came out, Giga poll. You can look it up. It's out there, Giga poll. Over 43,000 British people were interviewed, and 90% agreed that man-made climate change is a thing, and that we need to do something about it. That's 90%. So that leaves 10% on the other side. That's your Richard Tice's of this world, who's convincing or trying to convince other people that it doesn't exist and it's not going on.
Yeah.
So in a way, and I say this openly, look, Reform are ahead in the polls, 3.5 years to an election. But I actually think this is a massive Achilles heel for Reform UK. And this is why I think Nigel Farage, at this moment in time, is sitting on the fence. He's sitting on the fence, wobbling, because he actually knows this. He knows, and he can't be, you know, he can't be so stupid. He's a populist, and therefore he wants to be on the side of most people, the majority. And the majority are against what his party is actually saying. So you see, it's a dichotomy. It's a real situation for him going forward. So I'm optimistic. I think things are going in the right direction as far as net zero is concerned. We're getting there. Other countries are getting there. We're not on our own. The untruths are being undone one by one. And so I will continue wherever I am, whether I'm on LBC or whether I'm on other media channels, etc., saying what I say, because sometimes that's quite hard in terms of, you know, going on what you might call right-wing channels, etc., and, you know, getting it in the face. That's what I get sometimes, but I don't care, because I know I'm saying the truth. And if I didn't believe what I say, Nick, I'd be in a real difficult position. I don't think I could hold that conversation, but because I can, because I know the truth, because I follow the science, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, well, good for you. Now let's talk about the weather. Now, we talked about the climate. Let's talk about the weather. It's definitely autumnal out there. How's it looking for you?
All right. Well, so we're in autumn. You expect that to happen. But let me say this. I mentioned already that we're just going into the calm. In actual fact, now, mark this down, because we might speak in a couple of weeks' time. 2 weeks of dry weather for the vast majority of the country, 2 weeks to come. In other words, high pressure coming on the scene. I'm going to mention something else. I'm going to whisper it. Indian summer. Ooh. Indian summer. Yeah, ooh. we're getting to the time of year where you cannot nearly more or less call it. Now, even during today, Monday, we're going to see potentially a 21. 21 is
wow.
70.
Really?
Yeah, it's something, isn't it? That's T-shirt weather. That's down in the south, of course. It would be, of course, southeast. But I think equally, most parts of the country, apart from northwest Scotland, is going to get a bunch of rain, as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the parts of the country will be okay. So what these next 2 weeks are going to bring is morning fog. Watch for that one, because that will be dangerous as you're travelling around, etc. But quiet autumnal weather, and by the time you get to the afternoon, if you've got the sunshine in the morning, it lasts into the afternoon, then, you know, you will see some pleasant temperatures. People can do good things by this. And you know what? When you get this settled type of weather at this time of year particular, it's extremely good for the economy. People get out and do stuff. Even now, at this late stage of, you know, the season, that we can go out and we can enjoy ourselves, we can get into the high street, we can go on the parks, we can have an ice cream. All of those things help the economy going along. So I think these next 2 weeks are going to be interesting. There'll be no storm. I think it's Bram, I think, the next storm. No sign of Bram at this moment in time. But look, listen, watch down to the south of us, the Mediterranean, particularly the western side, because I think that's where the trouble will be. If we're getting the high pressure, they're getting the low pressure. So that's where I think the interest will be going forward in this next week or so. But for us, it's put your feet up time, get your deck chair out, and all of that.
Good news. Thanks for that, Jim. That's Jim Dale, okay. Founder and senior consultant at British Weather Services. Yeah, happy days. Now we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be with our US correspondent, John Christopher Buer.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
Police forces will be granted powers to put conditions on repeat protests, which the Greens and Lib Dems say will undermine people's fundamental rights. This morning, do you agree?
Richard Spur on LBC.
The Toyota CHR. Striking design. Trusted hybrid technology. Choose self-charging or plug-in hybrid. With Toyota know-how, reliability is built in. Now available at 0% APR representative over 24 months. And right now, enjoy an extra £1,500 off. Ready to go with confidence? Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Available on PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by December 15th. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. Conditions apply.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
You know the drill. End of series, credits roll, the next ITVX show begins. But how can you move on when everyone's still talking about it? The hack is making headlines with critics. It's the explosive true story of the British phone hacking scandal.
The Guardian says it's this year's Mr. Bates. And what about David Tennant and Robert Carlyle? They're on fire. No wonder the iPaper calls it TV dynamite in its five-star review. Some shows end at the credits. Others keep everyone talking. Stream The Hack, free on ITVX.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
John Christopher Buer is the White House correspondent for Real Political News and joins us on the line now. Hello, John.
Hello, how are you, Nick? Good to hear your voice.
Yes, very, very well. Thanks for joining us. Now, it's been quite a week. Donald Trump's peace plan, how's that going down in America?
Well, you know, the peace plan is a lot of the bravura. And, you know, he's said that he's going to make this peace happen. And he wants to get it done by October 7th, don't you know. So he can say he's done. He beat them all on October 7th is when the horrible hostage takeover was happened, and that's what he wants to do because his whole goal is to win the Nobel Peace Prize. That's his goal. That's why he's doing all of this. But he wants to do it expediently so he can get it all done by the 7th of October.
Well, it's also the date of the announcement of the Nobel Peace Prize is next Friday.
Right.
So he's got a head of steam up because he wants it all done and dusted by then so he can, you know, accept his gold coin.
Except the Nobel people are not, the prize people are not really happy. Now, think of this psychologically. He changed the Department of Defense. He wants to change the Department of Defense name to the Department of War. Now that doesn't really inure to their wanting to give him anything with peace on it. So that's an obstacle that the Scandinavians know that, and that's where Nobel put it in for creating his TNT, whatever it was, and now he's put his money into offering a prize to people who are peaceful.
Yes, and also a part of the stipulations are for the Nobel Peace Prize that the peace that they're referring to has to be settled and stable, and that's the last thing that it is at the moment.
Well, it's far from stable, and Trump, as I said, he wants to do it by then, and there's all sorts of things in this 20-point peace plan that he's bragging about. You know, which is a permanent ceasefire, release of all remaining hostages. 20 are still believed to be alive. The gradual Israeli withdrawal from Gaza and the roadmap for Gaza without Hamas. Now, Trump announced this plan last week. He did this with the help of Qatar and the president of Turkey, Erdogan. And he's also got Netanyahu to agree. But, you know, the two of them are at each other. And I don't know. I saw them last week at the White House. They weren't real chums, indeed.
Yes, well, Netanyahu is irked that Donald Trump, I imagine, that because Donald Trump seems to be backing him into a corner, because all of the world is almost unanimously delighted with the prospect of this peace plan. And and Hamas' response was not a yes. It was a qualified no, but yes, if we can work some details out. And I'm sure that's not what Netanyahu had in mind.
No, and Netanyahu has the ability to go in there and strike them with the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, and they've done an amazing job of decimating the country. And there's the issue with the Palestinians, and also in the West Bank, and you know, we've been to Israel. We know what the country is like. It's very small. You have Gaza on one side. You have East Jerusalem on the other side. And it's difficult. But I don't think Trump understands how things are done. I don't think he's got a great grasp on world geography or world economics. And you know, he's saying he solved seven wars, and some of the countries don't even know each other. So I mean, acetaminophen against anyway, Netanyahu needs Trump's help to win this next election. That is very important for him in his country because, as you can see, and I know you watch the news, you know, the Israelis are not happy with Netanyahu. They don't like the way he's handling this. They want the hostages back. And, you know, Bibi's not a big star in his own country, but he's got the Likud party, which is very conservative, behind him. And I won't even get into his wife and that political aspect, but we won't talk about that on a nice show like this.
Yeah, I wonder if Netanyahu's political future is actually in doubt about this, because even if he agrees to this peace plan and peace does break out, the right-wing faction of his coalition government is going to be very upset with this, and so the whole government could fall.
Well, he's been close to that for quite some time. I remember I was there in the 80s, and he wasn't a beloved individual back then. You know, he's a smart guy, but he and Trump are at each other, and I think they try to cajole each other, and I can use some Yiddish words, but sort of work each other system and really get to each other. But I think there's a lot of animosity and a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of unfriendly relations between the two of them. But that's what's going on, and I don't think it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. And I think Trump would like to have it over with so he can get his Nobel Peace Prize and he can go back to flaunting his capacity as the greatest empire in America. And the unitary executive is how he wants to run this government. And it's basically the Trump's the Trump rule of kings. You know, I would call it the divine right of Trump. And I think that's what he wants to do. The unitary executive is he gets all the power. Mm. He has all his cabinet hand selected, you know, in DOJ and so on and so forth. He's got the 2025. He's putting that initiative through. He's got the OMB behind him. He's got the Bureau of Labor Statistics holding back the numbers, and the Fed can't even act on what they should do about the 29th of October of what they should do in terms of raising the interest rates or not. And that affects us all. That affects the Brits and the Americans and our European allies and Japan, et cetera. So this is what he's holding up. And Trump is doing it for his own self-aggrandizement, which I've never heard of. I can't imagine that. Mm. But that's what he's about right now. So
Interesting about money is, and this is one of the my Trump list. You don't do bingo in America, but we call it a bingo card here. But my list.
Yeah, we know bingo.
Oh, okay. So on my Trump bingo card, four things got ticked off just this week. Live stream an execution, and that would be the boats blown up in international waters off Venezuela without knowing who was in them.
Yes.
Yeah. The goon squad will shoot into crowds of protesters, and somebody got shot just this week. He will issue a small rebate from the tax that people have paid in tariffs and call it a Trump bonus. And he'll put his face on money.
Now, that is the most egregious to me, because I remember when JFK, who was my hero, was on that, I believe it was the dollar coin. It was so precious and so superior to anything I've ever seen. You know, the president is supposed to be dead before they put him on a coin.
Yes.
Now, maybe they're holding out on us. I shouldn't say that. But maybe they're not letting us be totally aware of what the president's condition is. But, you know, there's questions about his health. But, I mean, I hope he's okay. I mean, he is the president. We don't need that. But, I mean, to put his face on the front of the coin and then him going fight, fight, fight on the back of the coin. I mean, Lincoln and George Washington and all the greats, I mean, McKinley and all of the $5 bills, even the $2 bill with Thomas Jefferson is kind of, it's horrible. It's just kind of a trashiness to it. And, I mean, he's never stooped that low, but he will.
I think the law is specific about this. You can't be alive and be on the money because America is not run by a king, which goes back to what you were saying about how he runs the country now.
That's right, the divine right of king. The Supreme Court needs to decide whether they really want to give all of that power of the purse to oust one person, just one person, and change all the checks and balances forever in this country. And, you know, when the Democrats get back in, they're going to take the same thing. They may go the same way, so you never know. This could be the end of what I've always appreciated as the democratic system in our country, and I've been proud of it. I've worked as part of the government during Clinton, and I was very honored to be part of this country's bureaucracy, federal agencies. I want you to know the hardest workforce ever. And I think it's a shame to see this kind of degradation of what the human elements of democracy and the things that make us strong are the things that make us noble are the rights of people to speak, and free speech is very important. And to go into the universities and to go after journalists, and then to put the troops. He's sending the troops. He thinks he's going to send the troops from California into Oregon, which he says is being decimated. That's against the law, and the governor Newsom is now suing him. Mm. The governor of as you mentioned earlier, of Oregon is suing him, and the governor Pitzka is suing him. But you know, these lawsuits. Trump lived most of his business life suing people and being countersued.
Yes,
and he's used to that, and thousands. That's how he stalls and forestalls things. Thousands, and that's how he keeps things going. And he figures as long as he can keep it in the courts, then he's free. But we'll see. You know, the things are changed, and I think what's going to happen in America is everybody's going to rise up and say, wait a minute, enough is enough.
Yeah, but time is running out for that, though. I mean, I was talking to another American journalist just the other week, and I started hyperventilating and berating them unreasonably for the inaction of American journalists, because it seems to me that American newspapers, some of the biggest and most famous papers in the world, they just don't seem to be aware of what's happening in front of their faces, or they're unwilling to actually report what is happening in their country. They just seem to be trying to make it all normal, and don't worry, everything's going to be fine in 3 years.
Well, I have to say, I don't find that. First of all, I don't feel that way, and a lot of my colleagues with the New York Times, et cetera, NPR. And the other organizations that I believe have integrity, they don't fall for that, and they do keep it. But we have a problem. You know, there's the White House briefing room where only certain people are allowed in, and then they're chastised for saying what they feel or asking questions that they think are pertinent. So there's a real problem here of how free our country is in terms of speaking and writing. But I urge, as they do, all journalists to speak truth to power, and I think that's going to happen soon. And Trump is trying to silence all his critics with business deals, threatening their employer. I mean, that's the other thing.
Exactly right.
And with threatening Redstone.
Yes,
you know that.
And with great success in far too many cases. John, I'm sorry, but I've just completely run out of time. So thanks so much for that. John Christopher Buer, the White House correspondent for Real Political News. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a boatload of podcasts, in amongst which you will find mine. If you don't have it, it's free. Get the LBC app from your app store now. I'll be back Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10, coming up on LBC Early Breakfast with Ian Payne. But first, Richard Spur.
Good morning. Still to come, all drugs, including heroin and crack cocaine, should be legalised, according to the Green Party leader, Zach Polanski. He said the war on drugs had failed absolutely, and that we now need a public health-led approach. I'll be asking what you think of that radical idea. But first, police forces will be granted powers to put conditions on repeat protests a day after nearly 500 protesters were arrested. The Lib Dem Home Affairs spokesman, Max Wilkinson, said the move would be the worst of all worlds by not tackling anti-Semitic hatred, but at the same time undermining the fundamental right to peaceful protest. So this morning, is this the change of policy we need from the government to protect those in society who now feel scared to live in this country? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock.
The Conservatives are due to claim a future Tory government would save £47 billion by cutting spending on welfare, aid and social housing. The announcement's expected to come from the Shadow Chancellor Mel Stride at the party's annual conference later on today. But the chief political commentator at the Financial Times, John Rentall, has been telling LBC he thinks Conservative announcements are meaningless and they're a spent force.
I mean, the Tory party brand is just so tainted, I think. I mean, the only thing that might save them is if Nigel Farage and Reform blow themselves up, or if the Labour government just runs the economy into the ground. They're probably both those things would have to happen for the Tories to have a chance.
The protest group Defend Our Juries has promised to escalate its campaign against the banning of the Palestine Action Organisation. It's now threatening a programme of civil disobedience after the Home Secretary said police in England and Wales will get new powers to restrict demonstrations. There'll be more on this over the next hour with Richard Spur here on LBC. Israel and Hamas are preparing for indirect talks in Egypt later on the US-led peace plan for Gaza. President Trump says a ceasefire can begin immediately once Hamas agrees to its proposals. Seth J. Franzman is a Middle East security analyst. He's been telling LBC Washington's involvement will be crucial.
The Trump administration is showing that it's all in. And I think, you know, that's the key factor here. As long as Trump can keep all the heads in the room and keep the Arab states and other countries on board, I think there is a good chance it can happen, but the next 3 or 4 days are going to be really key to see if this can get to the end zone.
Around 20,000 chickens are being culled in Northern Ireland following a suspected case of bird flu. Officials say disease control measures have been put in place after it was detected near Omagh in County Tyrone. Around 17,000 homes spent Sunday without power following gales created by Storm Amy. But energy suppliers in Scotland say more than 71,000 customers have now been reconnected. The forecaster Jim Dale has been telling LBC a period of calm is now on the way.
2 weeks of dry weather for the vast majority of the country, 2 weeks to come. In other words, high pressure coming on the scene. I'm going to mention something else. I'm going to whisper it. Indian summer. We're getting to the time of year where you can nearly more or less call it. Now, even during today, Monday, we're going to see potentially a 21.
And in sport, Manchester City are fifth in the Premier League this morning after beating Brentford 1-0. Sunday also saw Everton end Crystal Palace's long unbeaten run with a 2-1 victory. LBC weather, rain in the north overnight, but drier elsewhere with some clear spells, remaining breezy with a low of around 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Hello, good morning. Police have been granted new powers now to impose conditions on repeat protests to close a gap in the law, according to the Home Secretary. Shabana Mahmood said that the changes announced earlier would allow communities to go about their daily business without feeling intimidated. And it follows, of course, the arrests of nearly 500 people during demonstrations in support of the proscribed group Palestine Action in central London over the weekend. Protesters defied calls to rethink the event in the wake of the Manchester synagogue terror attack on Thursday, in which two Jewish worshippers were killed. Now, these new powers that could be imposed include moving demonstrators to a completely different place or restricting the time that the protests can occur over. And the Home Secretary added it's been clear to her in conversations in the last couple of days that there is a gap in the law and that there is an inconsistency of practice. So I'll be taking measures immediately to put that right and reviewing our wider protest legislation as well to make sure the arrangements we have can meet the scale of the challenge of those protests which we currently face. And I'll tell you in a few moments' time just what the reaction has been from the other parties to that. Some broadly in accord, others very much against. But first, here is the Home Secretary earlier with Lewis Goodall defending the changes and calling for a bit of humanity towards Britain's Jewish community after the attack.
Given that this is the first time we've had a loss of Jewish life just for being Jewish in our country for many decades, if not centuries, given that there's been this horrific anti-Semitic terrorist attack on our soil, I just think that a little bit of humanity could be shown. Of course, people have the right to protest, and people have clearly gone out and protested, and the police have made sure that they've had a presence at those protests, and arrests have been made. So the law of our land is being applied. But I do think, actually, it is perfectly fair to say to people, your right to not, you're not suddenly going to lose your right to protest if you just show a little humanity and give people a chance to grieve, especially when the community there is feeling particularly under pressure because of the scale of the protest and the feeling that Jews here are bearing a measure of responsibility for what's going on in Israel.
And I'd be interested to hear from you this morning if you both support largely the protests that we've seen over the months that have gone by since the beginning of the conflict, or indeed if you belong to the Jewish community, your reaction to just, you know, whether that does feel like you to injecting a bit of humanity and make you feel safer to live in this country. I've been hearing stories of Jewish people who've been here for a good deal of time actually suggesting that they're going to, or even going back to Israel, because they say they feel safer in Israel than they do on the streets of Britain. Now, what's the response been to this? Well, the Libs and the Lib Dems and the Greens have said it is an attack on the right to protest. Zach Polanski said giving police these sweeping powers to shut down protests because of their cumulative impact is a cynical assault on the right to dissent. The whole point, he said, of protest is persistence. That's how change happens. Do you think the suffragettes protested once and then gave up? Max Wilkinson, Home Affairs spokesman for the Lib Dems, said this will just do nothing to tackle anti-Semitism, whilst at the same time undermining the fundamental right to peaceful protest. And the Home Secretary saying the right to protest was a fundamental freedom, but it's got to be balanced with the freedom of their neighbours to live their lives without fear. And I think it's an incredibly interesting debate, and really a very, very grey area. On the one hand, I'm sure you, as I, would advocate that freedom of speech should be maintained in the UK and elsewhere, of course, unless people are being injured, hurt, made fearful, as, you know, I've heard from people in the Jewish community say they are when they've called my show and called the shows of my colleagues. And so she's right, I think, the Home Secretary, that there is a balance to be struck between allowing people to express their views, freedom of speech, pro-Palestinian marches, and actually protecting and galvanising those in society who simply feel that their entire existence in Britain is under fire, you know, and don't feel safe walking down the streets. You know, I remember taking calls from people, largely in London, but not just London, it has to be said, probably about a month into the conflict, so just sort of early mid-November last year, and they were saying, look, you know, I've always had anti-Semitic criticism as I walk down the street, I've always had it in my life, but it's quadrupled since this conflict began. You know, names being called, graffiti being daubed on people's houses. We've seen some of the most horrific examples of intimidation, which, I mean, certain extreme examples compared to some of the ghastly events in 1930s Germany. So do you feel that the Home Secretary has got it right now? Will this be enough to satisfy those who